the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or a full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium. Or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman, live at the county courthouse in Boulder, Colorado, where the suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey murder case is a suspect no more. The attorney for John Marcar, Seth Temin, announcing that his client is no longer under investigation for the murder of JonBenet.
We're deeply distressed by the fact that they took this man and dragged him here from Bangkok, Thailand, with no forensic evidence confirming the allegations against him and no independent factors leading to a presumption that he did anything wrong.
And Carr has now reportedly even been released from the Boulder County Jail. This all comes as a result of DNA testing. Samples taken this weekend from Carr did not match DNA taken from the 1996 crime scene. The DA filed a five-page motion this afternoon. It has more details about how the case collapsed. With me live at the courthouse, CBS News correspondent Lee Frank. Lee?
Not only did the DNA not match, but the district attorney now says they could not find any convincing evidence to place Carr in Boulder around the time of JonBenet's murder. Carr's relatives have been saying since before he was taken from Bangkok, Thailand, they're sure he was with the family at Christmas time 1996. The district attorney says Carr's family presented strong circumstantial evidence that he was with them.
What happens next? That's not clear. Carr still faces child pornography charges in California. I'm Steve Futterman, live in Boulder, Colorado, now with more CBS News. Here's Lou Miliano.
NTS investigators today rode around in a truck.
They're actually in a truck, in a high truck. They're going to be on the airport property. They're going to be sitting up at a level as if you could see from the cockpit.
That put them as high as the cockpit of Comair commuter jet, like the one that crashed Sunday, killing 49 of 50 on board. They wanted to see what the pilot saw, including turning onto the wrong runway, the one that's too short to handle their jet. With Katrina as a lesson, the federal government is dispatching dozens of emergency responders to Florida. It's a tropical storm now, just passing Cuba, but forecasters say Ernesto will likely return to hurricane strength and it could brush southern Florida. A year ago, everyone was watching Hurricane Katrina. It was heading for the Gulf Coast of Mississippi and Louisiana. This afternoon, President Bush has returned to the Gulfport, Mississippi.
You can't drive through this state without seeing signs of recovery and renewal. It's just impossible to miss the signs of hope.
President Bush said the government has spent nearly $480 million on Mississippi schools alone. Mr. Bush will end the day in New Orleans. Wall Street rebounded today as energy prices fell on signs that Ernesto won't hit the Gulf of Mexico and all those oil and gas rigs will just keep on pumping. Also, investors grew optimistic about a series of major economic reports on tap this week. By the closing bell, the Dow was up 68, the Nasdaq closed up 20. This is CBS News.
There are infinite dynamics in business. For instance, the just-in-time inventory that really is dynamic. Or the every SKU already has a customer dynamic. Or the I've escaped from the crushing shackles of my supply chain dynamic. How do you achieve these kinds of dynamics? Microsoft Dynamics. Software solutions that are specially designed to improve customer relationship, financial, and supply chain management. To find out more, visit Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics.
Hello, would you like to be more successful with the opposite sex? I'm Ted Baker, and my program can teach you how to attract a mate. Listen to this.
Ted told me about logging on to FreeCreditReport.com. I learned that my good credit could help me buy a car and a boat, and now chicks dig me.
My patented system could work for you, too. Log on to FreeCreditReport.com to get your free credit score and report. A nice condo could make you irresistible.
Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
You're on a diet, but you're unsure about the food you're about to eat. Try the cell phone diet.
Here's how it works. You snap a picture of your meal with your camera phone, send it off to dietitians, and get back nutritional breakdowns, personal advice.
This is the same as calling, like, 411. You just call it for food.
I think it's pretty neat if you're dieting or something, and you could, you know, get information.
But do we really need it?
I think it's crazy. I think people are really out of control nowadays.
I know what I'm not supposed to eat, and then I eat it.
You know, cheese has a lot of calories, and salad doesn't. People know that.
Probably if they need that kind of support, they need to work on other issues first.
Eve Chen for CBS News, Washington.
Insensitive. The charge against last night's Emmys, especially that pre-taped comedy bit about the TV show Lost.
It seems to me that the opening segment could have been largely preserved without having us watch a plane crash.
CEO Tim Gilbert's WLEX carry the Emmys. It's in Lexington, Kentucky, where hours earlier, Comair Flight 5191 crashed. I'm Lou Mulligano, CBS News.
Hello?
Hey, is Mark there?
Yes, it is.
Mark, I'm Paul.
Yeah.
I own your old new Passat.
Oh, yeah, the
Yes! Yeah. Oh, boy, it's great talking to you. Listen, if you ever want to just swing by and just, you know, sit in the Passat, you give me a call anytime. We'll make that happen.
Feel the pre-love. Certified pre-loved Volkswagens featuring a 112-point inspection. Come take a joyride today.
So what do your Discover business card purchase checks do down here in your desk drawer? Basically, show up your other checks. Your checking account checks don't earn rewards, but when you pay vendors with fee-free purchase checks, you earn cash back bonus on business purchases. Plus, you get the same payment grace period as your card. Maybe your purchase checks deserve a drawer of their own.
It's time to take control with the new Discover business card. Visit discoverbiz.com/itworks or call 1-888-DISCOVER to learn more.
Peter B. Collins!
Ow!
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. They named it after me, your humble host. And I'm delighted to be back in the saddle here after a long weekend. I want to thank my colleague Peter Laufer and our excellent producer Matt Brenner for taking care of business on Friday. And as usual, we've got a lot to talk about. Coming up later this hour, after we review the performance of the mainstream media last week, Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan will join us. We'll get his current thoughts about developments in the Middle East, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Lebanon. And we only have half an hour. Coming up next hour, we take a look at the situation in New Orleans just a year later. Chris Crom will join us from the Institute for Southern Studies. They have a website with a lot of powerful information about what's gone wrong with the reconstruction in New Orleans. It's called ReconstructionWatch.org. And also next hour, Mother Jones reporter Charles Bowden is in New Orleans. He'll join us with a first-person account of the misery and maybe some of the successes that have occurred despite massive governmental failures. We'll kick off the Free Speech Zone in our final hour today with a live report from San Diego and attorney Paul Leto. He's the one who is fighting our side of the story, trying to challenge the outcome of that election that put Brian Bilbray in to complete the term of Randy Duke Cunningham, who's currently a prisoner of the United States. And tomorrow is the day a judge should rule on some rather bizarre challenges raised by Speaker Dennis Hastert and other Republicans in Washington, that since they have sworn Bilbray in, you can't contest the election anymore. But hey, dude, he was sworn in before they actually certified him. It doesn't matter. In the marvelous world of one-party rule. Every week on Monday, we kick off the show with a representative of Media Matters for America. They're on the web at mediamatters.org. In fact, even Pat Robertson knows about Media Matters now. Paul Waldman, senior fellow at Media Matters, joins us on the program today. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Peter.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I had a three-day weekend, went to Southern California. They had the heat and the smog both under control. So it was very nice. And we've got a lot to cover, and let's get right down to business here. Interesting piece that's at Media Matters this week gives us a kind of a spiel, a transcript of some Washington Post reporters who are online in one of the newspaper's chats. I get the online edition, a digest of the Washington Post every day, and they're always offering their reporters in these chat rooms. And one of them triggered a very interesting commentary from your colleague, Jameson Foser, J-Mo, who alternates with you here on our show. And I'd like to give you a chance to set this up. First of all, Jonathan Wiseman is in this online discussion. And a question comes in from the left coast. They are kind enough to call it the West Coast. And the person who queried them asks about inconsistencies in Dick Cheney's story of what happened on the morning of 9/11 and whether or not the NORAD tapes conflict with the timeline that we've been given about Cheney's actions at the White House. And so this reader asks the reporter Weissman, is Cheney lying, or was he thinking very fast that day? And the reporter responds this way, if I can get him on the phone, I'll ask Cheney. Cheney's statements present a quandary for us reporters. Sometimes we write them up and are accused of being White House stenographers and stooges for repeating them. Then if we don't write them up, we're accused of being complicit for covering them up. So all you folks on the left, what'll it be, complicity or stenography? And that's a set of false choices, isn't it, Paul?
Absolutely. And what we wrote is that most people might choose the third option, which is journalism. And, you know, we watch things like these Washington Post chats that their reporters do because sometimes they're very revealing. And they offer you a window into the thinking of reporters when they get asked these kinds of questions from their readers, which is something that typical reporters don't do a lot of, that is answer these questions.
Right.
But I think what it reveals is a certain sort of attitude toward the statements of those in power, that if Dick Cheney comes out and says something that appears to be a lie, or we can even get away from this particular example, if he says something that reporters know to be a lie, which mm-hmm. frankly with Dick Cheney happens pretty often,
right.
The question then is, what is the reporter's responsibility? And what Weissman is saying here is that they have two options. They can either ignore it, in which case they'll be accused of covering it up, or they can just pass that lie on, in which case they'll be accused of being complicit with it. But the thing that I think most people would expect from reporters is for them to be willing to say, this is what Dick Cheney said,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, it's not true. Now, that's something that, that frankly, I've been yammering on, criticizing reporters for about 10 years now. It's a tendency that is really endemic in our national press today and has been for some time, that there's this real reluctance to call politicians out on lying, to say that this is what he said and it's a lie, even when the reporter knows it. And the real problem with that is that it leaves us as citizens with no way to find the truth, and it doesn't provide any kind of incentive for that politician to tell the truth the next time around. You know, let's face it, unless there's a kind of a punishment for someone like Dick Cheney to lying, then he's got no reason not to lie. Unless he knows that he's going to get in trouble for it, he'll just go out and lie again, because if a reporter is just going to pass it on and say, this is what Dick Cheney said, and not take that next step and say, oh, and by the way, it's not true, he's not telling you the truth, then there's no reason to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real problem there.
Well, and for example, on the administration's response to the alleged breakup of the liquid bomber plot in England, you know, we're now getting extensive coverage. The New York Times has maybe a 2,000-word story on it today. And in very polite language, they basically say that the original story that we were told was hyped, quite incomplete. And here's a quote from Michael Sheehan, former Deputy Commissioner of Counterterrorism in New York Police Department. There may have been too much hyperventilating going on. Well, that's a very polite way of saying that they hammered this story. They put every American flight on the same standard as flights coming from Britain. And what this story tells us, without explicitly saying it, is they really manipulated that information for political purposes.
And how many times does that have to happen with regard to the issue of terrorism before we finally start greeting these things with a greater level of skepticism?
Well, and a lot of people know about Keith Olbermann's very powerful piece where he reconstructed events immediately prior to changes in our national security or our homeland security alert status. And that really exposes the political usage of crying wolf.
Absolutely. And, you know, from September 11th onward, this White House has always understood that they can use the threat of terrorism to their political advantage. And, you know, sometimes we hear people say, oh, well, you know, this issue or that issue shouldn't be politicized. I'm not one of those people who says that. I think it's perfectly fine to politicize something if you do it fairly and honestly. There's no issue that we shouldn't talk about in political terms. If there's an election campaign going on, we should talk about terrorism and which party would be better on terrorism. The problem with the things that Olbermann was pointing out and that the Bush administration has done over and over is not just that they've brought those things into the realm of the political, but that they've done so in such a dishonest way, and hyping threats that weren't really threats whenever Bush's poll numbers got below a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in telling us that something that occurred was, you know, really going to possibly be the end of life as we know it, when in fact it turns out, we find out weeks later, really wasn't such a big deal. It's the dishonesty about those things, not just the fact that they're political, that's really problematic.
Now, while we're picking on Jonathan Weissman from the Washington Post, on the homepage at Media Matters Today, there is an item about Hurricane Katrina. We're all observing the one-year mark today and tomorrow, this week. And it's very interesting because Weissman, as Media Matters report, co-authored a piece with Michael Abramowitz that uncritically reported the GOP claim that public opinion of Bush's handling of the crisis has rebounded over the past year. And that doesn't appear to square with the facts, right, Paul?
No, and you know, this is one of those sort of news analysis pieces that tries to take a step back and look at things. And, you know, it started off being, I wouldn't say critical of the president, but looking at some things that haven't gone very well for him, and talking about the bad effects that Katrina and its aftermath had on his standing. But what we noticed when we looked at the article, after a while, we said, wait a second, there aren't any Democrats quoted here. And so you had some Republicans saying, yes, this didn't go well and it affected his standing. But then by the time you got to the end of it, they were saying things that you know, over the last year, his standing on this issue really has rebounded because they've done such a good job. And it turns out that that's just not true, that if you look at the poll numbers about how people felt he handled Katrina then and do now, it really hasn't improved at all. Even if there are a couple of notes of discontent with the Bush administration in there in the beginning of the story, you know, by the time you get to the end of it, no Democrat has been allowed to speak, and you find those kind of pro-Bush storylines sneaking in there too. You know, and we try not to be too formulaic at Media Matters. We try not to say that every single story must, if you're going to have three Republicans, you must have three Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about that kind of bean counting, but if you're going to do this kind of analysis piece, it should be incumbent upon you to talk to at least one Democrat to get some kind of an alternative perspective.
Did they talk to anyone from New Orleans?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think it was mostly about talking to political analysts and members of Congress,
mm-hmm.
People in Washington to see how they felt that the crisis had affected Bush's standing.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll pick up there as we continue. Paul Waldman is with us from Media Matters for America. Visit their website, mediamatters.org. When we return, we'll try to square the truth with recent comments from David Horowitz and Pat Robertson, and also Glenn Beck and Pat Buchanan. What a wonderful gaggle of groovy guys we have in Media Matters today. I am Peter B. Collins. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Saturday, September 2nd, live in Monterey, it's Stephanie Miller.
If you look at Katrina, it goes more toward the theory that they're just disastrously incompetent. No. But then if you look at Iraq, you're like, they're disastrously incompetent and they lied.
One of the fastest rising stars in progressive talk radio, Stephanie Miller, is appearing live Saturday, September 2nd at Monterey's Casa Munras Hotel. Tickets are just $45. Go to MontereyCountyDemocrats.org or call 758-9503. That's 758-9503.
Hello? Hello? What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Every Sunday morning at 10, Rock Rollin' Real Estate gives you the best information on first-time homebuyers, 1031 exchanges, investment strategies, exit strategies, and where the next hot real estate markets are. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, where you're buying ahead of the curve. Every Sunday morning at 10.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Suzuki Reno, a four-door, five-seat subcompact that's made in South Korea. For $13,000, this car is a great value for a first-time buyer. It's got a 100,000-mile transferable warranty, too. My demo has a 2-liter, 4-cylinder engine and a 5-speed manual transmission. Neither impressed me. The motor doesn't have enough power, and the Reno conked out in the middle of our grueling hill climb test. The stick shift is clunky, and the transmission doesn't have much headroom in second and third gears. Standard equipment includes AC, power windows and locks, a decent sound system, and power steering. It's an attractive package at an amazing price level, but test drive on your routes before you drive. By the numbers, the 2006 Suzuki Reno gets 23 miles in the city, 30 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $13,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We heard there just might be a brand new terrorist in town. Let's hear what this extremist says. Click around your cable dial, you're bound to hear the sound. He's put a fatwa on the Venezuelan prez, and here's to you, Reverend Robertson. Jesus doesn't even watch your show. No, no, no. God's ticked at you, Reverend Robertson, but heaven holds a place for those who pray. You'll go away. Hey, hey, hey.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show with Paul Waldman from MediaMatters.org. He's also the author of Being Right Is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. And, Paul, this is where we play the game called Who Mo Snarky. And it's really hard to pick between David Horowitz and Pat Robertson. But there they were together on Pat's TV show. And Media Matters came up. That must have been heartwarming up to a point.
It is. It's always heartwarming for us when the people that we criticize go after us on the air, which happens fairly frequently.
Yeah.
In this case, Pat Robertson asked David Horowitz about what he called this shadowy group called Media Matters. I should say there's nothing particularly shadowy about us. You know, you can go to our website and see the names of the people who work here and anything you want to know about us. But Horowitz has a particular bee in his bonnet about us because, frankly, we've taken a close look at the work that he produces. He runs this very well-funded think tank that produces... errors and all kinds of mistakes. We did a long thing about it where we documented all this on our website. Horowitz and his co-author immediately said that they were going to produce a detailed rebuttal to all of our claims. It's been many, many weeks, and we're still waiting. They have not produced any detailed rebuttal.
Well, he's knee-deep in a book tour. Come on.
Okay.
Let's listen.
My favorite thing that he said about us is that he says, I've been attacked like you've been attacked for many years. I've never encountered a group with lower ethical standards than Media Matters. But, you know, one thing that's interesting about that claim, and it's similar to something that Bill O'Reilly sometimes says about us, he calls us smear merchants, is that neither O'Reilly nor Horowitz has ever actually been able to point out something we said about them that was untrue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people are familiar with MediaMatters.org, we're not engaging in ad hominem. We're not calling people names. We point out when they say outrageous things. We put up the transcripts and the clips. And when they say something that's not true, we document why it's untrue. For that, Bill O'Reilly thinks we're smear merchants, and David Horowitz thinks that he's never encountered a group with lower ethical standards than we have.
Let's listen.
Maybe that says more about them than about us.
Let's listen to Horowitz and Robertson.
Well, you've got, I'm going to just read some of them. MoveOn.org, Center for American Progress, America Votes, America Coming Together, the Media Fund, Joint Victory Campaign, the Thunder Road Group, and then there's another group that's sort of a shadowy group called Media Matters.
I love that inflection.
The Media Matters is run by David Brock, who made a career by his own account out of lying and smearing people. It's a site that anybody in media, I'm sure that you're up there.
Yes.
Knows is the lowest. I've been attacked. I've been attacked for many years. I have never encountered a group with lower ethical standards than Media Matters. Soros and John Podesta, who was Clinton's chief of staff and runs the Center for American Progress, set this group up and funded it. It is now, they've opened a new office in Colorado. This is part of a Soros plan to take over the political structure of the United States, to end the war on terror. As we know it, and to, as he puts it, burst the bubble of American supremacy. These are people. This is really the left-wing agenda, that America is the problem. America has to be defeated. But now it has behind it. It's not just the Michael Moores and Cindy Sheehans. It has behind it a billionaire who has put together the most powerful juggernaut in the history of American politics.
You know, it sounds like somebody on the conservative side who was writing about the Council on Foreign Relations, the trilateralists. This may be worse.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to have to drop out here because of time, but you can see the whole clip for yourselves at MediaMatters.org, and we have spared you of the slur on George Soros. But for the record, Paul, has Soros contributed money to Media Matters for America?
No, actually, he hasn't. We'd be happy if he gave us money, but he's never actually given us any money.
And this shadowy office you're opening in Colorado, tell us about that.
You can find it at colorado.mediamatters.org. We're very pleased with the work that they're doing, and if things go well, who knows? Maybe there'll be 49 more.
Mm-hmm. And John Podesta, former chief of staff for Clinton, he's the head of the Center for American Progress. Does he have any direct connection to Media Matters for America?
The entire extent of it is that when Media Matters consisted of two people and an idea, the Center for American Progress let us use a spare desk and a telephone for a while.
Oh, well,
that's how Horowitz gets this idea that they set it up and have funded it and everything.
Wow. Now, that's a fairly low standard of journalism that Mr. Horowitz is practicing there.
Well, that's the least of it. If you go to MediaMatters.org and you search on David Horowitz, you'll find many, many times when he's distorted the truth and said outrageous things and lied and then lied again.
Mm-hmm.
But I invite people to go there to our site and check all that out.
And we didn't have time to trash Pat Buchanan today, but he's busy out there doing it to himself. So
we'll have another chance.
We'll get around to that at a future date. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your work.
My pleasure.
MediaMatters.org. Coming up next, Professor Juan Cole right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA.
Into 33 minutes after the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show continues. And I continue to be your humble host, Peter B. Joining us now from the University of Michigan is Professor Juan Cole. He's an expert on the Middle East, and he blogs every day, sometimes very early in the morning, at juancole.com. Professor, thank you for joining us. Nice to talk with you again. I wanted to start off with the comments over the weekend by Sheikh Nasrallah of Hezbollah that he was surprised at the ferocity of the Israeli response to Hezbollah's capture of two soldiers, killing of two or three others on July the 12th. Did his comments surprise you?
Well, no. I think everybody was surprised that Israel launched this massive war and attack on really all of Lebanon over that incident. Hezbollah and the Israeli military have been skirmishing down there in the south, especially in the Sheba Farms area where this attack occurred, which is claimed by Lebanon, for years. And even the former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon engaged in exchange of troops over such incidents. So that I don't think anybody but the Israeli high command expected that kind of response.
Mm-hmm. And to the specifics here, you just described Sheba Farms as a disputed area. Do you believe that this engagement, this encounter, took place on Israeli soil, on Lebanese soil, or is it still unclear at this point?
Well, the military specialist, Anthony Cordesman, was invited to Israel to sort of observe the Israeli side of the war and to make an estimation of it. And he was informed by the Israelis that the incident occurred in the Sheba Farms. That's not a disputed territory. That is certainly occupied territory. It was occupied by Israel in 1967. Is not recognized as being Israeli in international law. The only dispute about it is that the land is owned by Lebanese owners. Originally, it was said to have been part of Syria, but Syria has ceded it to Lebanon.
Mm-hmm. But on July the 11th, whose territory was that?
Well, it depends on who you listen to. The Lebanese would say it's theirs. The Israelis would say that they're occupying it until some peace agreement is made.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be obsessive about a minor detail, but I think it's significant because in the shorthand that becomes history, it has been clearly referred to repeatedly as a provocation of Hezbollah. And I'm still not clear on exactly who provoked whom on July the 12th.
Well, if Cordesman is correct, and the Israelis are the ones who seem to have told him this, then this was a raid into occupied territory. One country was occupying another. The country that was being occupied sent in forces to try to take it back, to try to make a point of their continued claim on it. In international law, this actually is an important issue because the Israelis don't have any inherent right to be there, and a border dispute is not recognized in international law as a legitimate reason for a war.
Mm-hmm.
And so was Hezbollah initially acting in a defensive manner, or did they launch rockets coinciding with this encounter with the Israeli patrol group?
Well, the Hezbollah has launched these small Katyusha rockets into the Sheba Farms area for years.
Mm-hmm.
The Israelis withdrew from southern Lebanon itself in the year 2000, and Hezbollah had as its kind of reason for existing to resist the Israeli occupation of Lebanese soil. When they essentially succeeded in driving the Israelis out, the group faced a certain amount of crisis. That was the source of their popularity. It was what organized them. It was what got people on their side, both in the Shiite South and in the rest of Lebanon. So now that that was gone, what would they do? And they fixed on this strategy of trying then to liberate a small sliver of territory that was part of the Syrian Golan Heights, but which was owned by Lebanese landowners and which they claimed for Lebanon. And so they retooled themselves to fight that fight. And the battle that was waged on July 12th was in accordance with that strategy.
Mm-hmm. The Israeli soldiers, too, that were captured, do you think that's the proper term, or were they kidnapped?
No, they were captured. This was a military encounter. The Lebanese government has ceded resistance activities to Hezbollah. It acts as an arm of the Lebanese government in that regard. It is the Israeli troops are there as part of an occupation force. They don't have a strong claim to be there in international law, so it's certainly in the law of war. They are enemy. They are captured.
Mm-hmm.
They're enemy combatants who have been captured.
I concur. We're talking with Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan here on the Peter B. Collins Show. On Friday, I believe the New York Times published a detailed map of the areas of Lebanon that were subjected to the aerial assault from Israel. And they noted the pockets where remnants of cluster bombs have been found. Number one, are cluster bombs, in your estimation, categorized as weapons of mass destruction? And secondly, has Israel violated an agreement with the United States by utilizing cluster bombs in this particular conflict?
Well, the precise status of cluster bombs is in dispute in international law, but it's certainly the case that these are anti-personnel bombs. They were invented and deployed, they were intended to be deployed on the battlefield against enemy combatants. They're very effective as such. If you were in the trenches and you had an opportunity to use them against enemy forces, you'd be very tempted to do so. But their use in civilian areas is extremely problematic on humanitarian grounds. They often don't explode, and so using them leaves behind these bomblets, and if they're left behind in civilian areas, children think they're playthings, and they pick them up and they get blown up. Four children were blown up and badly injured just 2 days ago in Lebanon in this way.
Mm-hmm.
In international law, it is forbidden to deploy weapons like cluster bombs in civilian areas with the foreknowledge that significant damage would be done to civilians without an overwhelming military purpose. So, if the enemy were charging at you across a civilian area and you could only defend yourself by using them, then you'd be within your rights to do so. But the Israelis seem to just have used them fairly indiscriminately in known civilian areas. And, of course, they were fighting a guerrilla group. Guerrilla groups, don't march in straight lines and have obvious battlefields.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be argued that the Israelis violated certainly the spirit, if not the letter, of international law in using these. And it appears to be the case that there is a secret codex to U.S. Authorizing legislation which provides these cluster bombs to Israel from the U.S. storehouses, that they're not to use them in civilian areas. If that's the case, then the Israelis have clearly violated that codex.
Mm-hmm. Professor, I wanted to just get a quick reaction, because you're there in Michigan, regarding Judge Anna Diggs Taylor ruling recently on the NSA spying case. She flatly said it's unconstitutional and subject to a stay and appeal to a higher court. She has ordered the eavesdropping program stopped. It really warmed my heart. But there have been a series of attacks on the judge since then, claiming that because she sits on a community foundation that has dispensed some money to the ACLU, that she had a conflict of interest. And I find this amazing, because the assertion is coming from the same people who couldn't find a conflict of interest in Justice Alito's representation of a mutual fund company that he held shares in. Not representation, but adjudication of a case involving a fund that he had shares in.
Well, judges are persons in civil society, and they have all kinds of connections. Scalia goes hunting with Cheney, apparently, and nevertheless sat on a case involving Cheney. I think that was clearly wrong. I mean, just because the judge has some kind of vague connection to ACLU, which, and it doesn't sound like it's a very close one.
No, she didn't write the check, and she didn't even sit on the committee that actually parceled out the money.
No, then this is just a red herring. There are mechanisms in the judiciary for dealing with these things. I think the judiciary is a very important place in which U.S. Constitution is protected. When judges care and are on their mark, they are our last lines of defense, because the general public doesn't usually know or understand the Constitution very well, and opinion polls show large numbers of them are sometimes appalled. A poll was done in Philadelphia where people were asked if people should be allowed just to gather and protest anytime they liked, which is, after all, the Bill of Rights, and they said, no, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. So unless the judges make the determination to protect the Constitution, the public and the politicians clearly would ride roughshod over it. And I think this is a sign that the slack that the judiciary was beginning to cut the Bush administration after September 11th is beginning to tighten a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a very important case. It'll be interesting to see how it works its way up through the system, and ultimately I expect it to get to the Bush-packed Supreme Court. Whether it happens during his tenure in office or not is unclear, but I think that's going to be a very interesting case when it does reach the Supreme Court. Professor, we're going to take a quick break, then I want to return and talk about Iraq and about Iran. We're talking with Juan Cole, professor at the University of Michigan. He blogs and publishes daily at juancole.com. It's called Informed Comment, and you can read it for yourself online. Again, juancole.com. If you have a question or comment, you can talk to us. It's toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's 888-5-PETER-B, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Tom Hartman.
The Bushes just don't get it. They think that the only way that you can get somebody to think the way that they think or the way that we think, the only way you can get someone to like America is to kill somebody. I mean, that's George Bush's strategy. If things aren't going well, kill somebody. Yeah, and if you can't kill them, then build a fence.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
I'm sorry, the world isn't that way. And, in fact, you want to see where the Republicans want to take us? Just look at where we were in 1890. Look at where, you know, look at Victorian England.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with us at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. We continue with Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan. Again, his website where he blogs is juancole.com, juancole.com. Professor, during the break, I was taking a look at your blog, and if you'll indulge me, I just want to come back for one more question about Lebanon and Israel. Then we'll move on to Iraq and Iran. You have an item here showing that we basically have a blockade of Lebanon that continues under Israeli force, and Israel says it will not lift that until the peacekeeping force is fully on the ground between Israel's border and the Litani River. Describe that for us and what the impact is on Lebanon.
Israel has a complete blockade on Lebanon, a country of nearly 4 million people, which is ethnically very diverse. So about 40% of the electorate are Christians, mainly Catholics. There are also Sunnis and sects like the Druze and so forth. The Shiite population, some portion of which supports Hezbollah, is probably also about 40%. The blockade hits all Lebanese, all the ports, the Tripoli in the north, which is a Sunni port, Junia, a Christian port, Beirut, a mixed Christian and Sunni. All of those ports are being blockaded. The airport is being blockaded, and only small food aid and so forth shipments are being allowed in. So restaurants can't get food from abroad, stores can't replenish, and medical supplies are being interdicted. The American University in Beirut has a well-regarded hospital. Its director is complaining that he's within a few weeks of being completely out of many medicines. He said that within a week, some people on dialysis could begin to suffer. So the Israelis are essentially strangling the Lebanese economy. The losses are $3 million a day in the retail and agricultural sections. Seed can't be imported and so forth. There is likely to be a very severe impact on the public health of the Lebanese if this goes on.
Mm-hmm. And is it your sense that this peacekeeping force is going to be effective? I mean, France has finally committed to 2,000 soldiers, and so deployment can be expected in the next couple of weeks. But I'm still a little dubious about whether this ceasefire will hold.
Well, the head of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, said yesterday that he didn't anticipate a second round of the war, I think signaling that he doesn't intend to pursue one himself if the Israelis will leave him alone. The Israelis are hoping for a security buffer between them and Hezbollah, pushing Hezbollah back 20, 30 miles from the Lebanese border, so there wouldn't be these constant skirmishes. With regard to Israel's main worry, I think, which is Hezbollah's rockets and missiles, the hope that they can push Hezbollah far enough back that Hezbollah's rockets can no longer reach Israel, and the hope that they could permanently stop the importation of rockets and rocket-making materiel into Lebanon, both of those hopes seem to me completely forlorn. Mm-hmm. So the international peacekeeping force that's being put in the south, it seems to me, is symbolic diplomacy more than anything else. Certainly, the European countries have made it very clear, and the United Nations resolution also is clear, that the role of these international peacekeepers will not be to disarm Hezbollah.
Right.
But, of course, Israel would have someone to complain to if a rocket landed in Shebaa Farm.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan here on the Peter B. Collins Show. On your website, your blog, you posted an excerpt from the epilogue of the new book by Noam Chomsky and Gilbert Achkar, and some quotes from Achkar. And in a lengthy piece, he makes the case that this is a low-level civil war in Iraq. And I'm not too interested in a semantic discussion, Professor, but it does become critical because we have the comments from Senator Warner, the head of the Senate Armed Services Committee, that he's concerned that the conflict that we have in Iraq today doesn't match the authorizing legislation that sent American troops into Iraq, and that if this is defined as a civil war, that a new resolution might be required. What's your view on that?
Well, I think Senator Warner is very worried about the condition of the U.S. troops in Iraq and the condition of the U.S. military and the way in which the Iraq situation may have a negative impact on U.S. security. I think in his heart of hearts, Warner has started to think seriously about withdrawal from Iraq, and I think this is a polite way for him to challenge the administration by saying that, well, the conditions have changed, the authorizing legislation no longer fits, and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that the authorizing legislation never fit this mission, because
and
the
Bush...
authorizing legislation was to pursue the war on terror.
From 9/11.
The war on terror didn't lead in any way to in its tracks back to Iraq.
And that was a powerful admission by the president at a press conference a week ago, but the media has given us extensive coverage of JonBenet Ramsey's would-be killer.
I'm afraid that the U.S. corporate news really is a form of babysitting and an attempt to distract the public from real issues.
Well, that's a case in point. Professor, now let's turn to some posts that are on your blog from Sunday with some, you know, mildly interesting comments from Ahmadinejad, the president or the prime minister of Iran. And also you cite Khamenei's comments. And these, likewise, are not being fully reported in the American media. Because, as you point out, when you put the remarks in context, Ahmadinejad has a much broader statement that does not necessarily involve violence against Israel or wiping Israel off the map.
Well, Ahmadinejad has all along maintained that he does not want to pursue aggressive violence towards Israel, doesn't want to kill any Israelis, and that he is, however, very much opposed to the continued existence of the Zionist regime. Well, you may ask yourself, how could you be opposed to the Zionist regime if you don't want to kill Israelis? And his answer, and you take it for what it's worth, but this is his answer, is that, well, the United States didn't necessarily want to kill a lot of Russians and Ukrainians back in the Cold War, but they wanted the Soviet regime gone. And in the same way, he wants to put pressure on Israel so as to cause its regime to collapse. And he views it as an aggressive, racist regime, and he would like to see, apparently, from what his remarks on Saturday, general elections in all of historic Palestine that both Jews and Palestinians could vote in, that would bring a single government to power that represented the interests of all the people in that area. Of course, this is completely unacceptable to Zionists, who are a form of nationalism, and they would take it as a dire threat. But it's not a threat of actual physical violence.
Mm-hmm. You wrote, the schlock Western pundits, journalists, and politicians who keep maintaining that Ahmadinejad threatened to wipe Israel off the map when he never said those words will never, ever manage to choke out the words he spoke on Saturday, much less repeat them as a tagline, forever after. And this really does fit into a pre-war run-up from the Bush administration. We've kind of seen this before.
Yes, I mean, the Iran is obviously being set up for a U.S. Military strike or invasion or something. The Iranian regime, in fact, Iran as a country, hasn't aggressively invaded a neighbor for over a century. So it doesn't have a tradition of being aggressive in that way. It's a relatively weak, ramshackle country. Its per capita income is about $2,000 a year, which is
not much.
Sort of a little bit more than Peru.
Right. Professor, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I thank you for joining us today, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Visit JuanCole.com, and you can read the items that we've been talking about with Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan. Coming up next, we take a look at New Orleans 1 year later on the Peter B.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
No DNA match in the JonBenet Ramsey case.
The warrant on Mr. Carr has been dropped by the district attorney.
A year after Hurricane Katrina, President Bush revisits the Gulf.
You can't drive through this state without seeing signs of recovery and renewal.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The case against John Mark Carr blew up in prosecutors' faces today. Our live coverage from Boulder, Colorado begins with CBS News correspondent Lee Frank.
Testing proves Carr's DNA does not match DNA blood evidence from JonBenet's underwear, and the district attorney now says strong circumstantial evidence shows Carr could not have been in Boulder when JonBenet was murdered the day after Christmas 1996. Carr's relatives have been saying all along he was with his family and that he has been obsessed with JonBenet's murder, but that he did not kill the beauty queen. What happens next? With me at the courthouse, CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman.
Lee, John Mark Carr may no longer be a suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey murder, but he's still not free. He remains in custody here in Boulder. Carr still faces charges in California, where he was accused in 2001 with possession of child pornography. He could also be prosecuted for leaving the state. And, of course, John Mark Carr seems to have some very deep emotional problems as well. Live at the county courthouse in Boulder, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Our legal analyst Andrew Cohen has watched all this unfold. He thinks investigators overreached.
If there was a critical mistake in all of this, it was the inclusion in the arrest warrant of references to first-degree murder and kidnapping charges. That gave people the impression that Carr really was the guy, when in fact investigators were just beginning to roll up their sleeves and work to confirm his involvement in the crime.
Now this.
To add some prestige to the pursuit of driving pleasure,
The Michelin Man is attempting to establish a master's degree program in driver's ed. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn why the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series Touring Tires is the ultimate study aid for those seeking to graduate to a higher level of driving. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
Deep inside the fax machine at your office, there's a business opportunity. See this toner cartridge? With the new Discover business card, you get cashback bonus on business purchases, even more on office supplies. So this baby not only makes faxes, it makes cash for your business. Yeah, and it's also very hot.
It's time to take control with the new Discover business card. Visit discoverbiz.com/boss or call 1-888-DISCOVER to learn more.
President Bush is in New Orleans after touring parts of Mississippi that were devastated by Hurricane Katrina.
Good citizens have risen up all over Mississippi to rebuild this state. Many volunteers travel thousands of miles to be here. In other words, I hope you realize you weren't alone.
Asked about federal aid, Mr. Bush said he hopes the $110 billion already approved by Congress will be enough, but the recovery, he said, will take years, not months. Tomorrow marks one full year since the storm, and there are many who say more should have happened by now.
One of the federal government's harshest critics is St. Bernard Parish President Henry Rodriguez.
You should get progressively better, but FEMA, the bureaucratic red tape and the stumbling blocks just seem to be never-ending.
His parish lost 26,000 homes and more than 50,000 residents, and many can't return to rebuild because there's nowhere for them to live.
If you get a person a FEMA trailer and put it on their property, they could work on their home. But this is a year, and we still have not gotten the amount of trailers that we need.
Cammy McCormick, CBS News, St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana.
Weakened by its encounter with Cuba, Ernesto has gone from hurricane to tropical storm, but forecasters say Ernesto could become a hurricane again before it reaches Florida. So Governor Jeb Bush has declared a state of emergency.
Get prepared to implement your family preparedness plan, to know if you're asked to evacuate exactly where you'll go, to make sure that you have the necessary supplies to live comfortably for 72 hours after the storm passes.
He's already ordered tourists to leave the Keys. NASA has scrubbed tomorrow's launch attempt for Space Shuttle Atlantis and might roll it back from the launch pad. The kids from Columbus, Georgia just won the Little League World Series in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. In the title game, they beat the team from Kawaguchi, Japan, 2-1. CBS News reporter Stephanie Lambadakis has details of Prudential Financial's $600 million settlement with the Justice Department.
Prudential is the latest financial institution to reach a deal with the government to avoid criminal prosecution for so-called market timing, in which brokers made deceptive mutual fund trades to benefit wealthy hedge fund clients. The deal resolves all the investigations and lawsuits against Prudential, but as part of this deferred prosecution arrangement, the company could still be charged if it does not abide by the terms of the deal.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
You trust your car and your tires to take you where you want to go. So who do you trust to take care of your tires? Sears Auto Centers. To come in right now, all tires are on sale from all the top brands, including Goodyear, Michelin, and Bridgestone. All tires, all on sale. If you've got places to go, make sure you're going to the place that takes care of your car, your tires, and you. Sears Auto Centers. See store for details. Exclusions apply. Sale ends 9606.
Yeah, my truck doesn't have coverage, but if my boat hit it, will my boat policy pay for the damage to my truck?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical.
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, you will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Peter B. Collins Show continues. And this hour, we're going to take a look at the situation in the Big Easy, NOLA, the Gulf Coast, 1 year after Katrina. New Orleans, always been the right place. Take it away, Dr. John.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. Did the right thing, but I must have used the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but I must have used the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for. I've been in a right place, but it must have been a wrong time. My head is in a bad place, but I'm having such a good time. I've been running, trying to catch hung up in my mind. Just got to give myself a good talking to this time.
Due to the vagaries of the calendar, New Orleans is the focus this week of a lot of media attention. The president will go for photo ops. And a week from now, will the same level of attention be focused on the incomplete reconstruction, the lack of real planning for the next major hurricane, and the fact that the levees are only partly reconstructed? This hour, we're going to hear two perspectives on the situation along the Gulf. First up is Chris Crom. He's the executive director of the Institute for Southern Studies, and they launched a website called ReconstructionWatch.org. That's ReconstructionWatch.org. Chris, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and like so many people, I think of New Orleans pretty often. But my fear is that the official attention to New Orleans has drifted measurably. And over the weekend, I caught part of Bill Maher's fresh HBO show, where he was joking that if Hezbollah had been called instead of FEMA, that New Orleans would be in much better shape today.
That's a joke making the rounds in New Orleans big time. There's no question about it. You talk to people down there, and they'll tell you they were left behind when the storms hit last September, August and September, and they feel like over the last 12 months they've been left behind again. That's the second tragedy of Katrina, the first tragedy being the death and destruction of the storms. But the second tragedy is when the cameras turned away. The nation kind of forgot about this region and the hundreds of thousands of people who were displaced. And our report that we just put out concludes that this region is not coming back, and if there isn't some bold change of action at the national level, this region is not going to revive the way that it could.
Well, and there's so much pushing and pulling going on. There's profiteering occurring, and because fully half of the residents of New Orleans have been relocated or dislocated elsewhere in the country, I saw this map in the New York Times the other day, and it was stunning to see the pattern of the spread of people who have been uprooted and unable to return. And so it's almost an obvious statement that New Orleans will never be the same.
New Orleans right now is a city in exile. These people are spread across all 50 states, and many of them are wishing, yearning to come home, back to their homeland. But they can't, and the reasons why they can't is because the schools haven't been rebuilt, the hospitals aren't back, there's toxins in their neighborhoods, there aren't jobs. There's so many barriers that are keeping families from coming back. And most of that goes back to really federal action. You know, people are trying to figure out where to assess the blame. It seems like that's what people are most concerned about for the one-year anniversary, instead of just doing things. But if you were to assess blame, I think what our report really conclusively argues is that it goes back to the federal level. If you look at housing, you look at these critical issues that are stopping people from being able to get back to their homes, it's because there hasn't been bold federal action to make it happen.
Now, according to the New York Times today, $44 billion of the $110 billion allocated for the Gulf Coast has already been spent. Is that in evidence?
Well, it's interesting. About $9 billion went to these big contracts, right? Right up to the storms especially. There was a big wave of contracts that went to rebuilding, for recovery and rebuilding. And as we all know, most of those are no-bid contracts. FEMA was supposed to have a database of small business contractors and minority businesses in the area that they could give them to, but they never created that database. They were supposed to, that was revealed in 2002, and they never did it. So who did they give it to? It was the usual suspects like the Halliburton and the Bechtels, and what they ended up doing is subcontracting it down two or three times, each middle person taking a cut. And so if you want to know where the money went, a lot of it just went to these big contracts, and a lot of the work didn't even get done. And what's surprising is in our report we profile, for example, on the coast of Mississippi, some of the biggest contractors are supposed to do the rebuilding there, but they never actually paid the workers. There's this group called the Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance. We profile them. They've had to recover about $1 million $1 million that these subcontractors weren't even paying their workers after weeks of work they're doing to rebuild the coast. And you just kind of go down the line on each of these programs where this money supposedly was spent to be towards rebuilding and recovery. A lot of it just disappeared. Nobody quite knows where it went. And a lot of it just went to the wrong places, rebuilding Army shipyards, going to big corporate contractors. If you're a homeowner who is supposed to give you a recipient of the federal program for housing assistance, not one dime of that money has actually gotten into hands of a homeowner in Louisiana or Mississippi.
And we still have thousands of trailers sitting in an empty lot in Oklahoma somewhere, right?
Well, that'd be in Arkansas, but yeah.
Arkansas, thanks.
it's astounding. These are tiny facilities, too. You know, I just saw, I can't remember the name of this guy who's the one, Rocky, I can't remember his last name, but President Bush seems to have found this one guy who's happy with how the recovery's been going, and he's been doing the media rounds, and he says everybody should just get up off their asses and do, you know, and stop taking handouts. Well, you know, for all people who are displaced by Katrina, housing assistance was cut off this summer. Unemployment assistance, that was cut off this summer. So what people are left with, they can't, their insurance companies won't talk to them. They haven't gotten a dime of housing assistance. So they're sitting in these trailers. Some of them are 240 square feet. That's what their families are living in, these little tiny trailers, which now they're finding are contaminated with toxic formaldehyde, adding insult to injury. So just down the line, these people have just gotten the short end of the stick, and there's just been no real seemingly political will to change the situation.
We're talking with Chris Kromm, K-R-O-M-M. He's the executive director of the Institute for Southern Studies, and they run the website reconstructionwatch.org. A lot of powerful information here. And is this irony or spin or contradiction? Here you have two slugs, news from the Gulf. NO flood protection plans lacking. Dateline today, August 28th. Next story, feds say NO is storm ready. How do we reconcile those two conflicting accounts, Chris?
We have a whole section in our report, and the report is 1 year after Katrina that I keep referencing, and mm-hmm. we have a whole chapter about hurricane readiness in that report, and it's shocking, and we have a really in-depth investigation about just how ready the city is, and I think by any reasonable measure, that city just has not, there's not been the effort to protect it. They're supposed to rebuild the levees to Category 3, which is what Katrina was, and then it accelerated after that, and that's not even been brought up. People in the city were demanding Category 4 and Category 5 strength levees. That just didn't happen. One of the crucial things, the pumps. The pumps are supposed to take out the floodwater. Most of the damage that happened in New Orleans was from flooding. It wasn't from wind. And 80% of the city flooded. And so you need these pumps to pump that water out. Well, they got so damaged during the storm, and they supposedly were rebuilt. Well, since they were supposedly rebuilt, five times they've broken down during light rainstorms in the city. So we don't even know that they have pumps that could actually get water out again if it came into the city.
And Chris, from a distance, what can you tell our listeners about efforts that they can undertake, people they can contact, government officials they can pressure? What do you see as the two or three most important needs of New Orleans that those of us in the other parts of the country could try to help with or try to lobby for?
Well, the number one issue is that money needs to be spent on human needs. You know, you hear about this $100 billion that's been spent, so much of it just diverted to crony contracts and to other uses that really just didn't see benefiting the people who need it the most. There's some very key issues that actually need more spending, not less. These are, we need to rebuild housing in the city. There's almost no rental housing. None of it's been rebuilt. Homeowners need help. People need homes to get back into if they're going to get back into that city. So we can't allow them to not spend this money on housing. Right now they're trying to demolish public housing, which actually really wasn't affected by the storm. They want to demolish 5,000 units of public housing. These people are getting locked out of their city because there's not this effort to rebuild the housing. That's number one. To the schools, they're dismantling the school system of New Orleans. And I think a lot of this, people fear there's been an agenda all along to dismantle some of these institutions, like the public school system. So now you have only 57 out of some 117 public schools that have been rebuilt, and seemingly no political will to rebuild them. So they're just kind of counting on private schools or charter schools or something to fill the gap, mm-hmm. but not that quality public education, making sure there's good public education for those families that want to come back. So I'd encourage everyone to talk to the representatives. Really the key issue is, you know, there's a sentiment that we've already spent enough. Well, a lot of money got squandered, but we still have a commitment to rebuild and help the people of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And we need a new commitment to really invest and target investment that goes to what people need to get back on their feet and get the region going again.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you for talking with us. Thanks for your work at ReconstructionWatch.org. I want to direct our listeners there, and you can read the report we've been talking about. It's quite sobering. There's a lot more work to be done. Thank you, Chris Crum.
Well, thank you for having me.
Coming up next, Charles Bowden joins us. He's a reporter for Mother Jones Magazine, and he's in New Orleans today. We'll get his account coming up next, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. September 2nd, live in Monterey, it's Stephanie Miller.
If you look at Katrina, it goes more toward the theory that they're just disastrously incompetent.
No.
But then if you look at Iraq, you're like, they're disastrously incompetent and they lied.
One of the fastest rising stars in progressive talk radio, Stephanie Miller, is appearing live Saturday, September 2nd at Monterey's Casa Munras Hotel. Tickets are just $45. Go to MontereyCountyDemocrats.org or call 758-9503. That's 758-9503. For whatever legal advice you need, go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a Baba Ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Take a look at your drive for this afternoon in and around the Monterey Bay. First look this afternoon at eastbound Highway 183. It is starting to get just a bit sluggish from Castroville as you head towards Salinas. In Salinas, there is a problem. Northbound 101 after Spence Road, an injury crash here. Two vehicles in the center divide, so no lanes are blocked. CHP not yet on the scene. It is getting a little bit heavier. Both sides of Highway 156, stalling crash free, but a few brake lights you will see between Castroville and San Juan Batista. This look at traffic is brought to you this time around by Centrum. When it comes to multivitamins, it's not just the number of ingredients, but how they interact that counts. Centrum balances combinations of nutrients to bring out their full potential. Centrum is balanced and complete. I'm Alex Daly, and that's traffic on KRXA 540.
the hour, and the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We are focusing on New Orleans and the Gulf Coast a year after Hurricane Katrina.
Bury my body, Lord, I don't care where. Bury my body, Lord, I don't care where. Bury my body, cause my soul is gonna live with God. All right.
This is an Al Kooper version of an old New Orleans funeral song called Bury My Body.
Bury my body, Lord, I don't care where. Bury my body, Lord, I don't care where. Bury my body, cause my soul is gonna live with God. Yeah, yeah.
Greg Pallas wrote a powerful piece, Dateline New Orleans, and it opens this way. Don't blame the lady. Katrina killed no one in this town. In fact, Katrina missed the city completely, going wide to the east. It wasn't the hurricane that drowned, suffocated, dehydrated, and starved 1,500 people that week. The killing was done by a deadly duo. A failed emergency evacuation plan combined with faulty levees. Behind these twin failures lies a tale of cronyism, profiteering, and willful incompetence that takes us right to the steps of the White House. Pallas goes on. Here's the story you haven't been told. And the man who revealed it to me, Dr. Ivor Van Heerden, is putting his job on the line to tell it. Van Heerden is the deputy director of the Louisiana State University Hurricane Center, the top banana in the field. No one knows more about how to save New Orleans from a hurricane's devastation. And no one was a bigger target of an official and corporate campaign to bury the information. And what Pallas goes on to tell us is that Dr. Van Heerden tried to warn officials that the levees were not tall enough and that the consequences could be as severe as what occurred. And he was pressured by the university's trustees to keep quiet. He was threatened with the loss of his job. He's speaking out now out of, I think, a sense of guilt and a sense of a need to be heard and for people to know what really occurred a year ago. Joining us from New Orleans is Mother Jones writer Charles Bowden. Charles, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and I want to commend you on your article that's in the forthcoming issue of Mother Jones. It should be arriving in subscribers' mailboxes this week about the immigration debate in our country, and I look forward to inviting you back to talk about that on a future occasion.
Well, that'd be fine. Well,
tell me your thoughts, being in New Orleans here as the calendar turns to the one-year mark, and there is this media attention and political attention that is fixed around the date, but a week from now, will people still care as much as they say they do today?
They will here. I taught in a high school today, that's why I'm here, and everybody's fragile. There's a storm out in the Gulf. Ernesto, they dread it. And the memory of Katrina is still there, the sense of fragility. You know, kids will talk about their parents wanting to leave town, the kids want to stay here, etc., etc. What I'm telling you is this is a city that's largely uninhabited now. I know they come up with these magic numbers about everybody's back. They're not. Most of it's a ruin, and people are fragile. One more blow here, and they think not only will they give up the ghost, but the entire nation will give up on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange place. I've lived quite a while, and this is the first time in my life I've seen an American city lost. And when it happened a year ago, it never occurred to me that essentially everybody'd stand back and sort of lay there in ruins. And that's the way it is.
Well, we have an administration that has managed to write off the interests of average Americans, the interests of middle-income taxpayers, the interests of people who didn't want to get involved in an unnecessary war in Iraq, and they managed to write off our concerns on a regular basis. But do you think they actually can live with themselves if they write off the Gulf Coast?
Well, you know, they're not writing off the whole Gulf Coast, but they're writing off this part of it. You know, the money is coming in to a degree in Mississippi and Alabama, but so far nobody's seen much here. The other thing I think you got to take into account that the levees failed here because of either poor construction or fraudulent construction. They weren't topped. You know, when the levees failed, it's because they weren't built right. And that's part of the dry rot we've seen in our government for 25 years as we kind of downsized it and privatized it. When I was a kid, the Army Corps of Engineers was considered a monster because they wanted to dam every river in the country, but nobody questioned their ability to build things well. Well, they built levees here that crumbled, and I think it's because of the changes in our government,
mm-hmm.
meaning outsourcing, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So this city now is just, I don't think this city, personally, these levees would withstand a Category 3 like Katrina. And frankly, I haven't talked to anyone here who thinks that.
Yeah.
It's a very strange, haunted place. Most of it, if you leave the French Quarter where I'm staying, you can drive for miles and miles and miles, and there's nothing. Just abandoned houses, stoplights that don't work, how, you know, no people. Now, I've been coming here since childhood. This is a jolt, and it's a year later. I covered Katrina
mm-hmm.
when it happened. You know, I come from this, I guess, fantasy of ourselves that we'll suck in our gut and we're going to whoop it, that we're not good at everything, we don't cook too well, but by God, we can fix things when they're broken.
Yeah.
This is a comeuppance to us. The other thing I think you got to say is this is a warning system. That Lester Brown of the World Watch Institute
mm-hmm.
terms these Katrina people as our first climate refugees.
We got to stop here for a break, Charles. We'll pick up right there as we continue
okay,
in just
easy.
A moment. Charles Bowden's with us in the Big Easy, New Orleans, here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Palacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Tom Hartman.
We have given our electoral process, the franchise by which democracy happens, the most vital part of the commons by which we administer the commons, we have privatized it. We have turned it over to private for-profit corporations.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And they have no damn business telling us how we voted.
The new Radio Free America, Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Tired of that dreaded drive into town for fresh quality produce? The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village has the perfect solution to your problem. Owners Ed Drobnik and Don Bikey have over 50 years of combined experience in the produce business and are passing the substantial savings on to their customers. The Produce Barn offers a wide selection of conventional and certified organic seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. We also carry a fine selection of specialty candies and snacks, exquisite gourmet gift items, and feature Freedom Meats, savory sausages, bacon, and marinated fresh meats. Heck, we even throw in free recipes. So, whether you're a restaurant, lodge, home chef, or treasured village visitor, stop by the Produce Barn at 13750A Center Street in the Center Street Plaza, behind Wells Fargo, and right next to the Chatterbox. We're open 7 days a week.
The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village, 659-5916.
That's 659-5916. The Produce Barn.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Got the Peter B. Collins Show, 33 minutes past the hour. We're talking about New Orleans and the Gulf Coast a year after Hurricane Katrina. We continue our conversation with Charles Bowden. He writes for Mother Jones Magazine. He's on the scene in New Orleans today where he taught a high school class a little bit earlier. And Charles, the vagaries of commercial radio, we had to take a break there and couldn't stop it. But I think you were about to tell us that New Orleans is a warning signal about the risks posed by climate change, global warming. Is that where you were headed? Oh, I need to push your button here. Now we can hear you. I'm sorry. It was an operator error.
You were spared there for a moment.
I'm the operator. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, sometimes the truth is more than inconvenient. The seas are rising. It's highly likely that storms are going to get more powerful. As Max Mayfield of the National Hurricane Center has pointed out, we could have a far worse disaster than Katrina. If a Katrina hit Houston dead on, we'd displace more people. And this thing is going to happen globally. We have more people have settled by the coast. The weather is getting nastier. And expect more of this. This is a shot across the bow about having more reasonable urban planning.
Mm-hmm. And in that vein, should we be rebuilding so close to the Gulf? Or would it make more sense to try to move New Orleans up the river a little ways?
Well, look, a lot of things would make more sense. But you can't move New Orleans. You know, it's 300 years old. There's a commitment. The city was already going through a slow death from 1960 on. In 1978, there were probably 650,000 people here. By the time Katrina hit, there were 450,000. It was undergoing a slow economic death. When Katrina hit, there was only one Fortune 500 company in the city, the public utility, and it was trying to move to Florida.
Hmm.
So that, you know, you had a kind of entropy going on.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the place is still viable. We all have a commitment to it. It birthed our music. Good God, without places like New Orleans, we'd have to sing damnable songs like Yankee Doodle forever. I mean, I would hate to think what this country would be without the black infusion in our music.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty dreadful back there in colonial times.
Absolutely. You got that right. Let's take a phone call. Dave's on the line from Humboldt. Hello, Dave. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Charles Bowden.
Hey, Peter. And Charles, when I look back a year ago, I asked myself some questions of why did FEMA on that day send away a well-equipped hospital ship that was capable of desalinizing hundreds of thousands of gallons of water, had 70-some lifeboats equipped with paramedics, nurses, oxygen, water. Why would they say, ship, turn around and go away? Why, when there was fresh water trucked in, did the FEMA tell the trucks, turn around and go back to where you came from, knowing that there are a lot of poor black Democrats dying of thirst and starvation and drowning? I ask, why would they do that? And I can't You know, I don't want to be a terribly suspicious person, but if I connect these dots, it takes me to a place I don't want to be. I don't know if you've gone down that road.
Well, I go down every road, but I'll give you two answers. To start with, Brownie was doing a heck of a job, as the president said. Look, you're dealing with incompetence. The same failure to relieve people happened just across the river in St. Bernard Parish, which is largely white. St. Bernard Parish had only two buildings in a parish of 67,000 people. Only two buildings didn't go underwater. This incompetence was equal opportunity. Our government failed everyone. I think it changed this country. You know, I think traveling around this country, which is what I do, that people, regardless of race and class, were stunned. They lived in a country where you couldn't get a truckload of water to babies in the Superdome. I also think they didn't want to live in such a country. It made them ashamed of themselves. It was like something has gone seriously wrong here if we can't take care of our own. Now, the second thing is inadvertent. I wrote an article for GQ when Katrina happened. And I said, what you're seeing is the equivalent of ethnic cleansing. And I'll tell you what I mean. Traditionally, you couldn't win statewide in the state of Louisiana without New Orleans because it was a Democratic bastion.
Right.
Well, now you can because all those Democratic voters are in shelters in Houston and other places. But it politically changed the state forever because of the evacuation. Let me ask you this. Do you think those buses hauling hundreds of thousands of people out of state were stuffed to the gills with Republicans? You know, this city, because it was poor, mm-hmm. and because it was 67% African American, was a Democratic powerhouse. And now that's gone. That was an accidental byproduct, but I'm certainly one that pleased some people.
Yeah.
Obviously, the people that could drive and go buy a house in Baton Rouge the next week probably had a little more money than the people on the bus. But anyway, going back to your question, it was a general failure, period. What we found out was not that we couldn't help Democratic voters in the Superdome, but that we're at a war in Iraq, and we can't even take care of our own people when there's a natural disaster.
Yeah.
And I think this will have an effect for years.
Indeed. Dave, a follow-up?
Well, yes, I find myself again asking now, and I just learned this, that many of the subsidized homes, again, homes that belong to poor black Democrats, are boarded up now, iron gates on the doors and windows, even if there is no damage to the home. It gives me the feeling that there's a plan afoot to turn New Orleans from blue to red.
I don't think there's a plan. I'll tell you what I think it is, and nobody will say it out loud. You have a bankrupt city, you know, with almost no infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have a big incentive, any of the people that run this town, whether they're white or black, to figure out a way to bring people back to the projects. And that's what you're talking about, these public housing projects.
Mm-hmm.
They can barely pay for their cops. Most of the hospitals are closed here. The water pressure doesn't work. They got a high-rise building here where they can't get enough water pressure to run the sprinklers for fire protection on the upper floors.
Well, and in some places, the lights are on less hours per day than in Baghdad.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, you go through the ruined districts here, and what's haunting, like I've been in the lower ninth, is people have spray-painted on their ruined houses, Baghdad.
Hmm.
It just stares out at you.
That's quite a message. Dave, thank you for your call today.
Thank you, Peter.
Charles, one of the other specters that was so grisly was the initial reports of crime and looting, but there were a number of people detained in jails in New Orleans, many of whom were treated like rats and left to, sometimes to their own devices, sometimes to the mercy of more experienced criminals who kind of took over.
They were either brutalized or abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
You had a kind of triage here, and frankly, people in jail were just left to their own devices.
Yeah, and a lot of the cops just went off duty, went AWOL, and some of those people have been disciplined. But has the criminal justice system recovered? And I have to put that in quotes because I'm not sure it was in great shape before Katrina.
No, it hasn't. I mean, we just had a federal judge here lacerate it that basically they've lost records. They've had people incarcerated without trial dates. I mean, the whole system's shattered. No, it is not. Mm-hmm. Also, crime is up to pre-Katrina levels in a city of half the population.
Yeah.
That it's feral out there in places.
Well, and that really is part of a larger piece, that since there aren't very many people there, there aren't very many job opportunities, the people who have returned are scrambling and, you know, simply trying to survive. And under the very difficult situations that you just described in terms of utilities and just basic quality of life, they don't have a whole lot of options, do they?
Well, they don't have as many cops either. I mean, I'll make it simple. You can move into these huge abandoned areas, set up your drug operation, and there's far fewer cops to patrol the city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, when I say feral, I mean feral.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a problem. The city has lots of problems. It doesn't have, the tourism here in the French Quarter is way down. I talk to these small business people, and that's what this district mainly is.
Sure.
And they're hanging on by their fingernails. Here's the deal. Their business is way down because not as many people come here, but their rents haven't been lowered. And so you see a lot of boarded up stores, et cetera.
Charles, we got another caller from the Central Coast. It's Marianne in Pacific Grove. Welcome, Marianne.
Hi. Charles, it's good to hear you. I'm really happy about that. A few months ago, I called Peter B. with one of my bright ideas when I heard that they were going to dismantle, or whatever it is, the aircraft carrier JFK, and I thought, why not take it in there, line it up by the Ninth Ward, and everybody could live on it while they fixed the place. And I spent a day on the phone tracking people down. At Peter's suggestion, I started with our congressman's office, and I worked my way up to a man named Mitch Smith, who is involved with the South Louisiana Port, which is it's between Laplace and someplace. My notes are horrible.
Okay.
But what I did find out is that the Mississippi at that point is only dredged to 48 feet, and the JFK draws 40. No, it's dredged to 47 feet. The JFK empty, which means stripped, draws 48 feet.
Oh, okay.
So much for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the gentleman said that they are considering or doing or going to do bringing in some Spruance-class destroyers for exactly that reason, because they are self-sufficient. They can desal, you know, everything.
Well, let's ask Charles for a reaction, because there was a cruise ship there that was used police officers and others to live on during an interim period, but it's gone now.
It's gone. It didn't draw much, which is why it was there.
I've been on ships, but I'm not a sailor.
Okay.
Look, here's what I think the problem is. The people that lived in the Ninth Ward, in Gentilly, in these various parts of the city, they want to go home. Look, a lot of them had no insurance. The only way they're going to be able to come home, rebuild their houses, is if the government finally releases this funding. I think the only way to set this city up so it's sensible is to set up certain districts that are more viable than others, if you understand.
Yeah.
Reduce the footprint. Instead of quibbling over who has insurance or who doesn't have insurance, since the Corps of Engineers functionally destroyed the city, indemnify everybody. Say, here's your money. If you want to live in Houston, you can take your money and start a new life. If you want to live here, here are the chosen districts we're starting with to repopulate.
Yeah.
And you all have an equal right to, you know, to get a lot in there. You understand?
Yeah.
Because look, you got to look at it practically. You can't run power lines, sewer lines, water lines that have all been destroyed 2 miles because somebody wants to rebuild their house and nobody else in the area does.
Yeah.
You know, it won't work. But what I think is you got to get past this white-black barrier, this upper-class, lower-class barrier here, and give everybody the same chips that lived here. Do you follow?
Mm-hmm.
50% of the homeowners were too poor to afford insurance, for example. If you want to rebuild the city, give them all the same shot. And then the people with the gumption to try and rebuild the city, and it's not easy work, they can come and try and do it. Then we'll see if we can bring back some semblance of New Orleans. So I'd like to make one other point. I'm sitting in the French Quarter, which basically didn't go underwater.
Right.
Earlier, I was in the Garden District, which didn't go underwater. I've been in downtown, which didn't go underwater. And everybody says, well, we'll just make this a tourist city, and people will come for the music. Well, none of the music was created in those places. That's where it was played for tourists. It was created in these basically black areas that were destroyed by Katrina. If you want the music back, you got to have the people back. Do you understand?
I sure do. It starts with culture.
It's a tapestry.
We're going to take a break and return with Charles Bowden. Marianne, thanks for your call today. Lines available if you'd like to talk with us. 888-5-PETER-B, toll free. That's 888-5-PETER-B. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the news. KRXA 540.
Tom Hartman.
The Bushies just don't get it. They think that the only way that you can get somebody to think the way that they think or the way that we think, the only way you can get someone to like America is to kill somebody. I mean, that's George Bush's strategy. If things aren't going well, kill somebody. Yeah, and if you can't kill them, then build a fence.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm sorry, the world isn't that way. And, in fact, you want to see where the Republicans want to take us? Just look at where we were in 1890. Look at where, you know, look at Victorian England.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Politicians may come and go, but for the past 33 years, Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey. Technically proficient, Dr. Turner specializes in listening to every patient's concerns and feelings. And because Dr. Turner cares about you, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112, 831-375-1112, 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner, 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Let's take a look at your drive in and around the Monterey Bay. In Salinas, still dealing with a problem. It's an accident northbound along 101 just after Spence Road. Injuries are involved, and it's confirmed in this crash. Minor injuries, but emergency crews are on the scene. Everyone is in the center divide. Just some slowing past the scene you need to keep in mind. Let's go to King City on a new crash. It's northbound 101 near Major Farms. It started when vehicles were swerving to avoid a mattress in the lanes of traffic. Now an accident reported at that location as well. To Gilroy, southbound 101 after Leavesley Road. You wouldn't think that a plastic bucket in the left lane would cause too many problems, but it does. Traffic is bunching up at the scene as everyone swerves to avoid it. We're also looking at heavier traffic now, both sides of 156 between Castroville and San Juan Batista. It's all brought to you by River Rock Casino. Two BMWs and $22,500 cash left. Next drawing is August 22nd. Follow the Dry Creek Rancheria signs. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRXA 540.
Contributing editor to Esquire, and he writes for Harper's and Mother Jones, a couple of my favorite magazines. And just one of his books is Trust Me, about Charles Keating and the missing billions. Thanks for writing that one, Charles. I went to high school with Charlie Keating's sons, who later benefited from his financiopath behavior.
Yes. Now I remember the family.
Yeah.
My back pages.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'd like to tell your listeners one thing.
Go ahead.
About New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like them, if they have a chance in their holidays this year, to come to New Orleans. One, people here could use the money. But two, there's nobody who writes and no one who does a television program that can convey this reality. Because
mm-hmm.
no matter what you see, you think, well, outside of that camera frame, things are kind of normal. And it isn't. It goes on mile after mile after mile. Anyone who comes here is just struck dumb. by the enormity.
Mm-hmm.
So look at it. If we had the best government in the world, the best people in the world, and all the money in the world, it's going to take time to fix this. But if you look at it, you'll see something the likes of which you've never seen before in your life, unless you're one of those individuals who survived something like the bombing of Dresden in World War II.
Mm-hmm. Well, the closest I can come, Charles, is the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was on my way to the World Series game that day when it struck. And it did really, you know, ripple through, stayed in our psyches for a long time. But it was kind of exhilarating to see the rapid pace with which a section of the Bay Bridge was rebuilt in 41 days. And, you know, people really came together to help in the critical areas. And we also had substantial help from the federal government. FEMA was not in nearly as enfeebled a state or a crony state in 1989 as it was in 2005. But even that, I can only say that, you know, we got off really easy here on the West Coast.
Yeah, it was finite. Do you understand?
Sure.
I mean, you know, it was contained.
Mm-hmm.
This is an entire city. It's just something that's overwhelming to look at. Now, I was here, you know, at the time of Katrina. It would stun me, driving across southern Louisiana and Texas, was the enormous amount of help people were giving to evacuees. I mean, you couldn't go into a Circle K or a gas station without mountains of church flyers that if you were a Katrina evacuee, you went here, you'd be fed, we'll find you a place to live, everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite moving, the failure of the federal government to see local people, churches, everybody pitch in. Made you kind of proud, like we were a nation of super Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
And it was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was just stunned. They carried a lot of the weight, just average citizens.
Now, Charles, during the past year, the reconstruction programs have often benefited from labor that appears to be from undocumented immigrants. Has there been a whole pathway that the Coyotes have taken to bring workers into New Orleans to be exploited?
Well, look, I've covered that. Part of it, I'll tell you why they're here. They don't need housing. There's very little housing in the city now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very expensive. You get these guys who have lived poor in Mexico or Central America. They're living in these abandoned houses under impossible conditions. Some of them have lived under trees. Now, if you get the people who are evacuated here, who are American citizens, they have to live an hour or two out of the city, commute in to a job, you know, They can't. There's no affordable housing here for them,
mm-hmm.
And so it's becoming a Latin city for that reason. Now, of course, these illegals will work for less, but their real advantage, and they're not working for nothing. They're working like $12-15 an hour here. Their real advantage is they don't need housing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not blaming American citizens for not wanting to live in an abandoned house with mold on the walls.
Yeah, I understand. Now,
that's why they're present, and that's why they've been coming. And when I was here in April wandering the city, I saw more Latin people than I saw black people. Yeah, because they'll work. Even though they're largely invisible since they're afraid of being deported,
mm-hmm.
And they're hammering all over town. That the city will never be the same. In 2000, it was 3% Hispanic. I talked to a preacher who covered, you know, was at Mardi Gras here, who was a Mexican-American, and he said at Mardi Gras, I heard as much Spanish as English. He was stunned.
Mm-hmm. That is a major change. Now, there was a lot of noise last fall because the Bush administration suspended the Davis-Bacon Act, which would have required federal projects to pay a prevailing wage and theoretically a union wage.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of union activity left in Louisiana. It's a right-to-work state. What has been the long-term impact of that move?
Well, you know, I think it was a foolish move. The best way to pump money into a collapsed economy like this is to pump it in the hands of working people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to spend it.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a strange example, but look at it. If you give a millionaire some extra money, what's he supposed to do? Go buy an extra refrigerator? Working people actually spend it. And if you raise their wage scale, it'll just ripple through the community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, what's happening, I'll tell you, I interviewed a lot of these Mexicans and Central Americans. They're living, you know, packed a bunch to a room for next to nothing. They're sending their money home. They told me that they were averaging, the people I interviewed, between $800 and $1,500 a month they were sending back to their families in Mexico and Central America, which naturally isn't benefiting anyone here.
Right.
On the other hand, they're working like the devil, and they're a key part of the reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty much admired when you talk to people.
Charles Bowden, about 45 seconds. What are your final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners about New Orleans a year later?
Nothing's been done. We spent a bunch of money, but nothing's really been done. The city is still on the ropes. It's like we've all gone to sleep. But we have to, if we're going to fix this thing, we've got to give money to the people that were destroyed by our government, meaning by the failures of the levees, because they weren't destroyed by Katrina,
right,
and give them a new chance at life. That's the way we get a city back, and that's the way we heal the lives of hundreds of thousands of evacuees created by our government.
Charles, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your thoughts and your voice.
My pleasure.
We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Charles Bowden with Mother Jones Magazine and other publications reporting live from New Orleans, Louisiana today. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for joining us this hour. Coming up next hour, we'll get a live report from Attorney Paul Leto on the challenge to the election in California's Congressional District 50. Right here.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman, live at the County Courthouse in Boulder, Colorado, where the case against John Marcar simply fell apart today. The man who made himself a suspect in the murder of JonBenet Ramsey apparently made up the whole thing. The crushing blow was DNA evidence taken from Carr this weekend. It did not match DNA from the 1995 crime scene. Here's CBS legal consultant Andrew Cohen.
You take a red-hot media blitz and you add in an unstable suspect and you combine that with an investigation that is catching up with the facts, and you are more often than not going to get a mess and an embarrassment, and that's what you have here. There is plenty of blame to go around.
Carr is no longer a suspect, but he's still in custody. Carr is still wanted in California on child pornography charges. I'm Steve Futterman, live in Boulder, now with more CBS News. Here's Bill Whitney.
Tomorrow is the anniversary of that awful day last summer when Hurricane Katrina slammed into the Gulf Coast. President Bush is touring the region, and CBS News correspondent Mark Noller is along.
A year after Katrina, President Bush says much rebuilding still needs to be done, but he believes that progress in some areas has been remarkable.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing what the world looked like then and what it looks like now.
Visiting a neighborhood he last saw 4 days after Katrina struck, Mr. Bush said there's a sense of renewal. He said the federal government remains committed to rebuild the Gulf Coast based on local priorities. And he told a reporter that in 10 years' time, he believes the destruction of Katrina would be a faint memory. Mark Knoller, CBS News, Gulfport, Mississippi.
Governor Jeb Bush is pleading with Floridians to take Ernesto seriously, even though it's weakened to a tropical storm over Cuba. State meteorologist Ben Nelson says Ernesto remains dangerous.
One of the main threats from this system, obviously, is going to be heavy rainfall across metro southeast Florida. We expect tropical storm conditions and these rain bands to begin moving onshore during the afternoon hours on Tuesday.
And tomorrow night it could regain hurricane strength. For the second year in a row, an American team has won the Little League World Series.
The kids from Columbus, Georgia defeated Japan 2-1 behind the three-hit pitching of Kyle Carter and a two-run homer from Cody Walker to claim the title. And winning the crown, Georgia handed Japan its first loss of the summer. The World Championship is the second for Georgia, which also won in 1983. Tom Spicer for CBS News, South Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Hundreds of volunteers turned out in Anderson Township, Ohio, to help search for a developmentally disabled boy who disappeared earlier this month. His foster parents said he'd wandered away from home. But today, Liz and David Carroll were charged in the death of 3-year-old Marcus Fiesel. Prosecutors say they left the child in a closet when they went to a family reunion in Kentucky. When they got back, the boy was dead. David Carroll allegedly took the body to a remote area and burned it. The Dow gained 68 points today, the Nasdaq up 20. This is CBS News.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
You trust your car and your tires to take you where you want to go. So who do you trust to take care of your tires? Sears Auto Centers. To come in right now, all tires are on sale. From all the top brands, including Goodyear, Michelin, and Bridgestone. All tires, all on sale. If you've got places to go, make sure you're going to the place that takes care of your car, your tires, and you. Sears Auto Centers. See store for details. Exclusions apply. Sale ends 9606.
A new economic report says Americans are working more but gaining less.
I'm Dan Revive. The good news from some of the country's largest employers, the economy does continue to expand, creating in the past year 1.7 million new jobs. But the average worker, when you adjust for inflation, is earning less. So-called real wages down by half of 1%.
The main reason? Energy costs. They went up 23% last year.
The president of the National Association of Manufacturers, John Engler, former Republican governor of Michigan, he proposes a major push for energy independence, alternatives to oil. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
Drivers get into accidents when they talk on their cell phones, eat, or apply makeup, but a woman in the Inner Mongolia region of China has a unique explanation for crashing her car. She was teaching her dog to drive. The woman told police she let the dog steer while she worked the pedals, but the dog steered into an oncoming car. Fortunately, no one was hurt. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
To add some prestige to the pursuit of driving pleasure, the Michelin Man is attempting to establish a master's degree program in driver's ed. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn why the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series Touring Tires is the ultimate study aid for those seeking to graduate to a higher level of driving. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
Deep inside the fax machine at your office, there's a business opportunity. See this toner cartridge? With the new Discover business card, you get cash back bonus on business purchases, even more on office supplies. So this baby not only makes faxes, it makes cash for your business. Yeah, and it's also very hot.
It's time to take control with the new Discover business card. Visit discoverbiz.com/boss or call 1-888-DISCOVER to learn more.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Matthew C. Renner. We pay attention to middle initials here. And we're heading into our third and final hour here, my favorite part of the day. It's the Free Speed Zone, where we open up the lines to hear from you. You can call with a comment on any subject, from any point of view, and from anywhere within the sound of my voice. We pay for the call toll-free. You dial 888-5-PETER-B. Put a 1 in front of it, then 3-8-5-7-3-8-3-7-2. You got it? 888-5-PETER-B. And once again, I want to thank Peter Lauffer, who sat in for me on Friday so I could sneak in a 3-day weekend. Be warned, I'm going to sneak in another 4-day weekend coming up with the Labor Day holiday. We'll be playing the best of Peter B. Collins this Friday and next Monday. So don't blame it on Karl Rove. I know some of you people worry. And one of the things that Peter Lauffer discussed with our man Brad Friedman on Friday, Brad, of course, the proprietor of bradblog.com, which is the go-to site for election integrity issues in this country, what they talked about is the unusual approach that has been taken to responding to the challenge of the June special election that was there for the purpose of replacing Randy Duke Cunningham, who had to resign so he could go to prison. And the remainder of this term is currently being filled by a guy named Brian Bilbray, the Republican who was sworn in despite the fact that the results of the election had not yet been certified. We turn now to Attorney Paul Leto, who's been on our program before. As you may know, he was involved in election challenge issues in Washington State that ultimately produced a very narrow victory for the current governor there, Christine Gregoire. And he took on the case in District 50 in San Diego just about a month ago. Paul, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Peter.
Now, tomorrow you're expecting a ruling on the issues that have been raised here. Give me a sense of the process here and at what point the Registrar of Voters asserted that you have no standing to challenge this election because it's now a congressional issue, a federal issue, because Mr. Bilbray was sworn in, if prematurely.
Right. On August 22nd, they both defendants, Representative Bilbray as well as Registrar Haas, filed a motion to dismiss saying that the court had no jurisdiction. It wasn't a standing issue per se. They're saying that not only can we not challenge it, the court has nothing to say about it. There isn't anybody that has the power to contest the early swearing in of Representative Bilbray, which took place only 7 days after the election and, you know, 2 to 3 weeks prior to the audit, prior to the certification, prior to the election, even the provisional ballots being fully counted. Basically, prior to the election being over, they swore in Bilbray, and their position is there's nothing we can do about it.
And I find this rather unusual, because if the election of Mr. Bilbray was tainted, then the fact that the election wasn't certified when he was sworn in does not remove the taint from the election that permitted him to be sworn in. Am I thinking clearly here?
Yes, and well, it's not only that the court would not have the power to make any changes, but they're also going a couple of steps further. They're saying that the court cannot allow the evidence to even be looked at. Because we're willing to concede, for example, that the court could not order that the federal House of Representatives to remove Bilbray and seat in Busby. We've never made that part of our case because you have a federal-state problem there.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is we want to find out the truth of this election, find out what the truth is, and then, you know, the court issues its decision, and then the House of Representatives can exercise their separate function. If they were to choose to ignore the court's, you know, decision, they would pay a political price for that.
Mm-hmm.
But even that they don't want to allow. They want this entire action dismissed so that the truth cannot be found.
Is there a difference between a special election and an ordinary, you know, biannual election? Because as I understand it, a new representative, a freshman, comes to Washington, and they have to present the certification of their election in order to be sworn in. Am I correct on that?
That's the normal process. The reps are sworn in up to 30 to 45 days after the election, and it's after certification. You just, you know, remember Bush versus Gore, and all, everything was timed off of the certification. You know?
Right, but there's the Electoral College in the presidential cycle that, of course, doesn't apply here to a congressional race. But isn't there a stipulation or a step that has to be taken for the newly elected individual before they can actually be sworn into office?
Well, and that would be certification, although in this case the congressional record indicates that a person by the last name of Lapsley, Suzanne Lapsley, in the Secretary of State's office, faxed over unofficial returns of some sort, and the House of Representatives considered that to be good enough, and he was sworn in on June 13th.
Wow. Now, from your perspective, this should not stand. What are the key issues that you have raised in the briefs that you filed that the judge is reviewing for a decision tomorrow?
Well, first of all, you know, if you want to talk about Bush versus Gore in 2000, this is changing the rules after the fact. Because when going into the election, if everybody would assume that the state or the county is doing the counting of the vote, and that they would also do the recounting of the vote. There is no federal recount or anything like that, so one would assume that those rights are all going to be state rights. However, by the unilateral action of the House of Representatives swearing him in, suddenly that all changes. They say it deprives the state of any power or jurisdiction to do anything about the election, and so that creates an equal protection problem because the voters in the 50th district do not have recount rights anymore, and yet the voters in every other congressional district in the country do have recount rights.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Bush versus Gore hold? Well, Gore asked for a recount in four counties instead of all of the counties, and the Supreme Court said that violates equal protection. So here you have, you know, the defendants actually asking the court to violate equal protection by denying the voters of the 50th district recount rights.
And, Paul, are your counterparts from the California Attorney General's office?
No, the defendants would be, Representative Bill Bray, who's represented by his attorney, David King, and then James Chapin is the attorney representing the Registrar of Voters, Michael Ha.
Okay, so then the litigation is confined to the county level,
right.
Yet the Congress, Dennis Hastert, is maintaining that there's no layer here between the county and the feds, even though the state Secretary of State's office provided them with the preliminary results that they then said was sufficient to swear in Mr. Bill Bray. So I may be stretching here because I'm not a lawyer and I don't know how all this stuff works, but it just seems to me that the Republicans are trying to have it two ways here.
Sure. Yeah, they're actually relying upon state authority, that unofficial fax from the Secretary of State's office to be their cue, to swear somebody in Washington, D.C., and yet when it suits them, they turn right around and say, well, we don't respect state authority anymore because we've already sworn them in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're admitting that there is a process that the state must go through. I guess their contention obviously has to be, we don't need to wait for certification. We don't need to worry about election contests or recounts. We can swear people in when and if we deem it, suitable to do so. So really, their argument is so sweeping that it would work even if there wasn't election. They could swear in somebody just out of the blue without an election, or even the loser, and assert this exclusive jurisdiction, and the principles that they are trying to argue for would say there's nothing we can do about it.
Wow. I have trouble processing this, Paul, just because it seems to be such an incredible power grab and so damn undemocratic.
Well, it's exactly what the Republicans were trying to argue in 2000. They said, well, falsely or misleadingly, but they were saying you can't change the rules after the election. Well, the rules in that case weren't really being changed, but here they certainly are being changed because nobody expected a swearing-in to happen 7 days after the election, and then a subsequent argument made that deprives the court of all jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real key. I mean, there have been, after research, it's not the only person ever sworn in quickly, but it's the only person that I know of sworn in quickly where there was an election contest on the horizon, and then they make the subsequent argument that, the state has no authority. So that's really the key.
Yeah. Now, this case is being heard by a Superior Court judge named Uri Hoffman. Without jinxing anything with a public comment you might regret, how do you read the judge's interest in the issues you've raised?
Well, I think the judge, he was listening. I think he paid attention. I suspect that with issues like this, judges tend to sense that they belong on appeal, and they tend to want the appellate courts to sort out these, higher issues of constitutional law. So I would, I don't want to jinx anything or anything like that, but I think the signals that we have, the tentative signals that we have indicate that he probably would lean against jurisdiction, but we're going to go in tomorrow and argue that as strongly as we can.
Yeah. Well, Paul, anything else you'd like to mention before we break here?
Well, I think that, you know, election nullification is really what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, through a direct power grab. And it's really just a more obvious form of election nullification. The less obvious or the more subtler forms is the electronic voting machine fraud, which is also a part of this case. But I think people need to realize that, you know, democracy itself is really what's at stake here. Because if they can swear somebody in and claim that there's nothing that we can do about it, there's really no need for elections, and I think people need to stand up at this time.
Amen. Well, Paul, if you have a chance, call in tomorrow and update us on the ruling that comes out of the court you expect tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, Paul Leto in San Diego, attorney for the challengers of the election that we've just been discussing that sent Brian Bilbray to Congress before the election was certified. Wow. I want to hear your comments. Lines are open for your calls right now. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. No matter what your political persuasion, you should be hopping mad about this. It's unconstitutional, undemocratic, un-American, unacceptable! This is the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Hello? Hello? What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Every Sunday morning at 10, Rock Rollin' Real Estate gives you the best information on first-time home buyers, 1031 exchanges, investment strategies, exit strategies, and where the next hot real estate markets are. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, where you're buying ahead of the curve. Every Sunday morning at 10.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Let's take a look at your drive in and around the Monterey Bay. Right now in Aromas, we've got a problem. It's Aromas Road at San Juan Road. A tree and a power line are down, so not on the highway, but very, very important. With the tree and power line down on the roadway, you need to drive with caution in that area and watch for crews as they head out to deal with it. Let's go to Monterey County, Highway 1, south of the Bixby Creek Bridge. An accident reported there. A solo vehicle spin-out involved here and some minor injuries. And we're clearing up some details of this accident in Salinas, northbound along Highway 101, just after Spence Road, some debris still in the way. And in King City, northbound 101 near Major Farms, vehicles are swerving to avoid a mattress. This look at traffic brought to you by Toyota Avalon. The Toyota Avalon with an EPA estimated 31 miles per gallon on the highway and all the little extras that you desire. That's Avalon, where luxury meets fuel efficiency. I'm Alex Daly, and that's traffic on KRXA 540.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Your calls and comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. We're in the free speech zone while it lasts.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out.
Now, why is that, Gil Scott here?
You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
Oh, you mean if they manipulate our elections, it won't be on the TV news?
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Bars without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary.
Yeah, just update some of the names and it all works here in the aughts. That's Gil Scott-Heron. The revolution will not be televised. And once again, we have a story here on the Peter B. Collins Show that you're not going to read in the L.A. Times that is not adequately covered either in print or corporate broadcast journalism. And you heard Attorney Paul Leto, who is awaiting the outcome of a Superior Court ruling tomorrow. But the basic story is that Republicans assert that by jamming the oath of office ahead of the certification of his election, that Brian Bilbray is now above the law. And there is no recourse, no redress in challenging whether his election was valid or not. And when you tie this together with the other power grabs that Republicans have used, like Bush's signing statements, like the way they have simply bludgeoned the rules of the House and Senate, so that when there's a close vote on legislation, they leave the vote open long enough that they can twist arms, and in some cases they've even bribed Republicans on the House floor in order to get them to change a vote. They play fast and loose with all the rules and the laws. Not just the rules of, you know, who gets the corner office, but the rules that explicitly tell us how, under our Constitution, legislation is enacted. We have the so-called Deficit Reduction Act of 2005, where the House version doesn't match the Senate version, and therefore it should not have been signed into law by the president. But that didn't stop him. And this is one issue where the Democrats have stood up, and they filed a lawsuit to try to overturn that. It'll take years. But it astounds me that these kinds of manipulations can take place, and the media gives us John Benet. I am sickened by it. I'd like to hear from you. I want to know if you're as outraged as I am. 888-5-PETER-B. Lines are open for you. 888-573-8372. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B. To Aptos we go, and Ed's on the line. Hello, Ed.
Greetings.
How you doing?
Well, yourself.
I'm okay, but this really bends my mind.
It boggles the mind. It is just absolutely... You know, if the shoe was on the other foot, I think they'd be... You know, they have the press, so their screams, I guess, would be heard a lot more than our screams.
You bet.
That's one thing. And
of course, we cannot put the shoe on the other foot. That's just a rhetorical device right now, because they are firmly in control, and they are willing to arrogantly and ruthlessly impose their will, even when it conflicts directly with the laws and the rights of Americans.
Yes. one can only hope that at some time, you know, the Reds will come to their senses and kick some of their whatever that are. Some of those guys are real pieces of work.
We need...
The two from Kansas are just, I mean, they're absolute Neanderthals.
Yes, they are. But we need people who don't see this as a partisan issue, Ed, who understand that if Republicans can do this now, at some point, if Democrats ever regain one-party rule, they might do it too.
Well, exactly. I hope that we have the... I would be yelling loud and hard if the shoe was on the other foot. If my party was pulling the tricks they were and being so, you know, you expect a little bit of things that the parties will pull. You know, mm-hmm. the best offices and what that. But
yeah.
But denying hearings and subpoena power and any of the other things that you need to run the government, they just don't do it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was going to say with when you had the attorney on there was I would have been interested to push this up against what went on with, is her name Cantwell's?
Maria Cantwell?
Yeah, the
contested race.
I forget.
It was Christine Gregoire. Yeah, Christine Gregoire was the winner, and the challenger, the Republican, was a guy with an Italian name I can't summon right now.
Exactly. But anyhow, it seemed like that, you know, they were screaming loud and hard when it was their, you know, their boy was the underdog, and you know, and all this stuff, and then yet when it turns on and the Democrats, the underdog. They completely ignore us.
Well, that's not an accident.
Well, I know. with Brad, that's what I'm worried about is that they've got this thing wired so that, you know, it doesn't make any difference how hard we campaign and, you know, with a pull of the lever, they negate all the hard work and get out the vote work that we do and. And it's, you know, it's all for naught. And
well, and it begs the question, did the Republicans rush through his swearing in because they knew they had stolen the election and they feared that that would be uncovered? You got to ask that question.
Well,
I don't know the answer.
It's a very interesting case, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and see if we do have any justice in the United States anymore.
Ed, thanks for your call. Give that grandbaby a hug for me, will you?
Will do. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Ed from Aptos. Your call can be next. I want to hear from you. Lines open, 888-5-PETER-B. If you're a first-time caller, you go to the head of the line, 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale, reminding you to join me this Saturday afternoon, 4 to 5, for Reality Radio, where we'll interview great guests from the Central Coast, ordinary people with extraordinary stories. There's nothing we won't talk about. We'll have author Joe Klass, TV host Rama Pijama, life coach Cynthia Ling, Tony X to share his harrowing life story of crime, drugs, and rehabilitation. Saturdays, 4 to 5, Reality Radio, right here on KRXA.
God listens to Billy Sunshine. Maybe you should, too. Sundays, 3 to 5, on KRXA, 540 AM, The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar. Coming soon.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Here we go. Starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
And look for coverage of California's contested election in District 50.
We act like clowns. We just steal elections. Run the country into the ground.
Yes, in three verses of that song, stolen elections, Hurricane Katrina, and the way the Bush administration lies to us and the media doesn't bother to correct the record most of the time. And I am just so steamed, and ladies and gentlemen, there are other talk show hosts, you know, who get all worked up in a theatrical way, and they don't really care about the issue that they pretend to be worked up about. And if you've listened to this show long enough, you've probably figured out that I'm not that kind of an actor. I cannot believe that the Republicans would be so bald-faced as to use this kind of a maneuver and then try to back it up legally. Because as attorney Paul Leto told us, if this judge rules against the challengers tomorrow in San Diego, it's virtually open season. Because with one-party rule in both houses of Congress, there is no real way to challenge an unethical power grab like the one that was used to install Bill Bray, and now claim he is above any kind of investigation or challenge to the underlying election. This is so fundamentally un-American. And if they are able to get away with it here, Katie, bar that door. Now, that's not all. Let me add two issues to the mix, and then we'll go to more of your calls. At 888-5-PETER-B. If you're on the line, hold there. I'll be right with you. 888-5-PETER-B is the toll-free number. You may have heard us talk about various issues related to HAVA, the Help America Vote Act. It came out of the tainted elections of 2000, and it's what's driving the acquisition and implementation of touchscreen voting machines and other electronic devices in our elections. And one of the elements of HAVA is to enhance the access and ease of voting for disabled Americans. A wonderful goal, and something I fully support. However, to use Diebold machines and other DREs, direct record, I don't know what the E stands for, these machines, simply to accommodate disabled and handicapped individuals, to me, is not enough justification to deploy tainted machines that could be hacked or manipulated at various stages. So there is a thing called a vote pad that is designed to help disabled people cast their ballots. It is a very simple, low-tech device. And the vote pad company has applied for certification from California's Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, an appointed Republican. He was appointed when the elected Democrat flamed out in a self-induced scandal. And late in the day on Friday, Bruce McPherson declined certification to the vote pad machine. Now, I don't know all the details, but given the pattern of McPherson's behavior since he was appointed to the job as the top election official in this state, I have little confidence that he ruled on the merits. And I invite you to go to the web and Google vote pad. You can probably find more information. You might go to Brad's blog. I'm sure he'll have something up eventually because Brad is on the road these days. But it's just another poke in the eye from the people who are supposed to be making sure that we have fair elections in this country. One other item. The New York Times reports today that the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law is releasing a report. They examined election records from thousands of counties across the country since 2000. And they found that the DRE machines, these touchscreen voting machines, are problematic, particularly for certain types of voters who tend to vote Democratic. Low income, low education, black or Hispanic voters. And according to this report, these voters find it easier to use digital machines that allow voters to make one choice and then flip to the next page, you know, like an ATM. But when they are faced with a page that includes all of the candidates at once, errors occur. Problems develop. You can read more about this for yourself. But I raise it because there are so many different reasons not to embrace electronic voting machines. And these are just a couple of additional ones that aren't directly related to fraud or manipulation of the outcome. Back to your calls we go. Steve in Watsonville, thanks for holding on. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Peter. You just gave me another thought there while you're talking, but I'd like to address the Lexington crash. But first, you just reminded me of a famous quote from Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut describing how the white man took over the Western Hemisphere. No one could believe until it was far too late how evil and greedy the pirates really were.
That's a good line.
Yeah. The crash in Lexington, it flashed to me right as soon as it happened, as soon as I heard them saying, oh, pilot error and all this, I hear corporate malfeasance. When those two planes hit the World Trade Center, my first thought was, you deregulate air traffic control. This had to happen eventually. And, of course, they got to cover it up. You imagine the wrongful death lawsuits that those airplane corporations would get if it was found that this was corporate malfeasance that caused those crashes?
Well, after 9/11, Congress passed an airline bailout that specifically limited, or I think it federalized the liability for those incidents on 9/11.
And can you believe how evil and greedy the pirates really are?
Yes, I can, and it still stuns me, Steve.
it enrages me.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for your call, and thanks for sharing your outrage. 888-5 Peter B is my number. We go to Chris in Salinas. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
I'm okay, thanks.
Hey, I just got in on this conversation you're having about the California 50th there.
Right.
But have Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or any congressman, you know, made any statements on this at all? I mean, this should be a complete outrage for any Democratic member of the House of Representatives.
Well, you're right. It should also be an outrage to any elected member of the House of Representatives who thinks that there should be standards for serving in that body. But to your point, no. I have not heard Nancy Pelosi or her office issue any statements regarding District 50. There has been some interest expressed by Howard Dean and by others at the Democratic National Committee. There's a vice chair named Susie Turnbull, and she has made some comments acknowledging that there are problems and specifically focused on the Cunningham successor there in District 50. But it's sorely inadequate. The Democratic Party should be a plaintiff in the lawsuit that Paul Leto is carrying.
Yes, they should.
And they're not, to my knowledge.
Has Bruce McPherson made any statement? Or is he still hiding?
Well, the only thing we know is that in the hearing on Friday in San Diego, it was revealed that an assistant to McPherson faxed the preliminary results of the special election in District 50 to Washington, presumably to the office of Speaker Hastert. And she has been identified as Susan Lapsley, and she works for McPherson in Sacramento. And that's pretty much what I know so far.
Yeah, well, I hope everybody gets out and votes, and
well,
hopefully it counts.
It's one thing to vote, but if they're going to do these kinds of maneuvers, then I'm really worried, because the very people who need to go out and vote will be discouraged and will take the position that if the Republicans can jam this election, this special election in District 50 in the manner they appear to have done, then, you know, people are going to just give up and say, my vote doesn't count, my vote won't be counted, and even if it is counted, they'll put their thumb on the scale to make sure the Republican wins.
Yeah. Well, Peter, you know, keep up the good work and get the word out, and all we can do is just keep fighting.
Well, Chris, we'll do what we can. Now, I want to mention one other issue that you have been emailing me about, and I want to acknowledge I've been a little slow on the uptake. But we're going to try to do a segment later this week, Chris, on the sweeping deregulation in Sacramento of the cable laws, the regulations of the cable industry. And in short form, what's going on is the Democrats have accepted a huge amount of money from AT&T and the other phone companies that want to be able to deliver video over phone lines to us. And on the face of it, that's not a bad thing. But the legislation that has been sponsored by Assembly Speaker Nunez essentially overrides the county contracts that currently regulate cable television in the state. And that could create a whole unregulated arena where the cable companies could jack up their rates, diminish service, and then just say, well, if you don't like it, call your phone company and have them deliver broadcast or cable television to you. And it's just, it seems to be a replay of the deregulation of our electricity generation back in 1998. And I'm very concerned about it.
Well, they want to deregulate the internet. I mean, they want to get rid of internet neutrality also.
That's
and
it.
The PUC just deregulated the phone company's charges.
That was announced on Friday. The California Public Utilities Commission has decided that ratepayers no longer need any kind of protection on their landlines. It's what they call wireline telephone service. So your regular old phone at home, your phone at work, they are saying that there is so much competition for your phone service that they don't need to set the minimum rates anymore. And we can leave it up to the generosity of the phone companies and competition and market forces to keep the prices and the rates down.
Yeah, this is just an all-out assault on just about every common that we have as a people of this country.
Yeah.
and it's really sad.
Chris, thanks a lot for your call.
All right, thank you.
We're going to take a break and return for more of your calls in the Free Speech Zone. There's a line open for you, and I'd like to hear your comments. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. That's 1-888-573-8372. Email's working again. You can drop me a note, peter@peterbcollins.com. We talked earlier today about problems in the media. You heard Pat Robertson attacking Media Matters. We also heard from Professor Juan Cole at the University of Michigan, and a powerful hour about the real failures of the Bush administration related to reconstruction of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. So there's plenty to talk about. Room for your call. Get on the line now. I'd like to hear from you. 888-5-PETER-B is my number. It's 46 minutes past the hour. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Hello, this is Al Moore with More Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by More Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's MOHR imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Did you hear the show when God called?
Being an atheist myself, having God calling yesterday was a really big blow to all of us.
I think I can go out and say another case of a person's life being changed courtesy of the show and KRXA Radio.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
The show, weekday mornings, 9 to 10 on KRXA 540.
Let's take a look at your driving in and around the Monterey area. First off, let's go to Highway 101. Fires are burning along Highway 101. Northbound side at Coyote Creek Golf Drive, so bad that the fire department is closing the Coyote Creek Golf Drive off-ramp. Southbound side of Highway 101, you'll see a grass fire at Tennant. Not as tragic, but you will see it on the right-hand shoulder. Smoke visible, of course, from the highway. Use extra caution. Over to Aromas. Aromas Road at San Juan Road. A tree and power lines are down on the roadway there. Drive with a lot of caution. Those power lines could be hot, according to officials. And in Monterey County, still clearing up this wreck. Highway 1, south of the Bixby Creek Bridge. It's a solo vehicle spin out. Traffic this time around brought to you by River Rock Casino. Two BMWs and $22,500 cash left. Next drawing is August 22nd. See the Players Club for details. 101 North to Lighton Springs exit. Follow the Dry Creek Rancheria signs. I'm Alex Daly, and that's traffic on KRXA.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the final segment here of the Free Speech Zone today, and there's still room for you to call at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. In our first hour tomorrow on the program, Columbia University Professor Rashid Khalidi will join us. He's fresh back from the war in Lebanon. Interesting perspectives right here. And I'll just remind you that the road to hell is paved with stolen elections.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
Also, also just a program note that Wednesday, the first hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, will feature University of California at Berkeley Professor George Lakoff. He's got a powerful new book out all about the term freedom and the way George W. Bush and his cronies have tried to hijack that word and what it means to us. It's going to be a powerful hour. That's Wednesday, hour one of the PBC show with Professor George Lakoff. Now to your calls again, John in Carmel Valley. Welcome to the show today. How are you?
Peter, I agree with you about election fraud, and I'm guessing it's going to get a whole lot worse before it gets even a bit better. But as bad as that is, and God knows where just that one issue is going to take us as a nation, the real issue, the one that's staring every one of us, and not just in this country, but in the world, right in the face, is the one I think the Bush administration is most guilty of doing nothing about, purposely doing nothing about, and that's global warming. All the other issues, even the probable upcoming war against Iran, takes second place when the chickens have all come home to roost from global warming. Because, first of all, we don't even know what may be in store there fully. It could be infinitely worse than even the worst pessimist yet has been making out. And one of the reasons I stress that is that it appears to be coming a lot faster. The signs are that it's coming a lot faster than even pessimists of a year ago would have thought.
Well, and last week we spoke with the New York Times environment reporter Andy Revkin, who's written this book about the North Pole. And
I heard that.
I encourage you to pick it up. It's not a complex academic text, and it's loaded with graphs and pictures and stuff, and I found it very interesting. And it's kind of a way to seduce you into paying attention to climate change, because the book initially is just about the North Pole and what's interesting, and then it goes into the description of how quickly climate change is being evidenced at the North Pole, and their concerns that that's the area of the world where it could really leapfrog, where as the ice cap melts, it reduces the white reflective nature of the ice cap, and therefore the sea, the Bering Sea, will absorb more ultraviolet rays and more heat from the sun, which will accelerate the warming process, cause more ice to melt, and make it more difficult for new ice to form.
Oh, yeah, and the other big half of the issue that we can all feel the effects of every day is that we don't have an energy policy, and we would certainly have a better one if we were, the two are integrated tremendously. In other words, one of the ways to get a decent energy policy fits right in with what we have to do to really face global warming. But the thing I find most appalling, above all, about this failure to come to grips with this is the Bush administration and Republicans in general keep saying, we're from Missouri. Just show us.
Right.
Give us more evidence. No. I'll give an example of what I mean. Bush has said a bunch of times, if even one job were the cost of signing up to Kyoto, he wouldn't go for it.
Right.
We all know how concerned he is about jobs and the fate of working people. It's just bluster in the extreme. He is saying, and they're all saying it, whether it's Limbaugh or Hannity or all the rest, they're saying, we won't be shown. They're from a brand new state, a brand new galaxy almost. We won't be shown.
Yeah, it's
their whole philosophy.
It is the state served by the river called denial.
Well, we're all good at it now. We're all too good at it.
All right,
denial,
John,
is just
John, I got to jump, but I appreciate your point, and you're right on target. Thanks for the call today. Susan in Santa Cruz, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Okay.
Good. I don't really agree with John, because if we don't take care of this election stuff, which is somewhat within our control, I don't know how we're going to ever take care of the stuff that is outside of our control. The whole global warming thing is, you know, it's way beyond a lot of things we can do.
But, well, yes and no. I understand your point. Yes. At the same time, changing consciousness is going to be the first step toward finding the political will to do something about it.
Right.
And so there is a lot that we can do as individuals. And, yeah, so I agree with both of you and disagree with both of you.
Yeah,
how's
well,
that?
What I wanted to say is I was thinking about, you know, your outrage and, you know, mine earlier today or whatever. And it's really because we, well, I'm thinking about it. I don't know if it really is, but it seems to me that there's a whole psychology here in that we don't get a whole lot of what they do because we don't think like them, right? So they go do these outrageous things, and it takes us a while to catch on, like with the election. So they're already doing it again by the time we catch on. And then just as we catch on and we think we can be vigilant and maybe do something about it, they go someplace else.
Well, you're right. They do. They change up their tactics, and they are one step ahead of us, whoever us ought to be.
Right, and that's all I wanted to say. That, you know, we need to stay extremely vigilant and cover as many bases as we can.
Amen. Thank you, Susan.
Right. Bye.
All right. Good to hear from you today. This just came in, and Matt Renner, our able producer, passed it along to me. I will identify the source, and you can evaluate this for yourself, but this is a series of posts at the Daily Coast website today, and it turns out that there is a prankster, a man named Rene Oswin, O-S-W-I-N, who said he was the Assistant Deputy Secretary for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and he has been making a series of media appearances where he makes really outrageous statements. Oswin said that the Housing and Urban Development Department had planned to demolish 5,000 units of perfectly good public housing, even though housing in the city is in tight supply. And he said former occupants have been begging to move back in. We're going to help them do that. He said Walmart would withdraw its stores from near low-income housing and help nurture local businesses to replace them. He added that the federal government would spend $180 million to fund at least one well-equipped public health clinic for every housing development. So this guy basically launched his own PR offensive, and it's going to be interesting to see how many corrections will be issued over the coming few days from media outlets that swallowed what he did, hook, line, and sinker. But still, there's no room to bring us the important news. We get more JonBenet Ramsey. This is Peter B. Thanks for listening today. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same station, with another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Saturday, September 2nd, live in Monterey, it's Stephanie Miller.
If you look at Katrina, it goes more toward the theory that they're just disastrously incompetent.
No.
But then if you look at Iraq, you're like, they're disastrously incompetent and they lie.
One of the fastest rising stars in progressive talk radio, Stephanie Miller, is appearing live Saturday, September 2nd at Monterey's Casa Munras Hotel. Tickets are just $45. Go to MontereyCountyDemocrats.org or call 758-9503. That's 758-9503.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
No matter what John Carr says, the DNA says he didn't do it.
The warrant on Mr. Carr has been dropped by the district attorney. They're not proceeding with this case.
Defense lawyer Seth Temin says he's deeply distressed that Carr was brought to Boulder from Thailand with no forensic evidence linking him to JonBenet Ramsey's murder. Reporter Rick Salinger of CBS television station KCNC explains why investigators suddenly dropped the case today.
They quashed the arrest warrant against Carr for two reasons. The first reason is they could not find any evidence linking him to Boulder, Colorado on the night that JonBenet Ramsey was killed. And secondly, Carr's DNA did not match that. It was found on a blood spot in JonBenet Ramsey's underwear.
Carr has not been released. He's wanted in California on child pornography charges. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen has been following this case.
If there was a critical mistake in all of this, it was the inclusion in the arrest warrant of references to first-degree murder and kidnapping charges. That gave people the impression that Carr really was the guy, when in fact investigators were just beginning to roll up their sleeves and were to confirm his involvement in the crime. Those big expectations, I think, make this outcome look even worse than it is.
President Bush will spend the night in New Orleans after visiting Katrina-ravaged areas of Mississippi. A year after the storm, he said there's a sense of renewal.
Good citizens have risen up all over Mississippi to rebuild this state. Many volunteers travel thousands of miles to be here. In other words, I hope you realize you weren't alone.
Mr. Bush is not promising any additional federal funds. $110 billion has been authorized by Congress, and the president says he hopes that will be enough. In Florida, they're bracing for Ernesto. It's now a tropical storm over Cuba, but as it moves north, State Emergency Management Director Craig Fugate says Ernesto could re-energize.
Hurricane watches are up, has some potential to strengthen as it comes off the coast, but this storm should not result in loss of life if people will just heed the safety messages.
Governor Jeb Bush has declared a statewide emergency, and he's ordered tourists to evacuate the Florida Keys. An attempt to launch Space Shuttle Atlantis tomorrow has been scrubbed, and NASA might roll the spacecraft off the launch pad. Investigators in Lexington, Kentucky are still trying to learn why that Comair jet turned onto the wrong runway for takeoff. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr thinks the pilots made a desperate attempt to get off the ground.
The fact that there's no braking action.